Listen to the Carbcast on iTunes and subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone or iPad. For Android users, find us on the Stitcher Radio app. Go to Google Play and download Stitcher Radio for podcasts. Add us to your playlist and click listen to hear us anytime you like. Don't forget to enable offline listening if you wish to save your data on the bank. We're also available on the SoundCloud app under The Carbcast, or check our website at www.thecarbcast.com. Remember, listening through an app will recall where you were up to when you get that screamer, or you could always make a whip. The fish, of course. Welcome to the Carbcast, introducing the two biggest nods that don't use chalks. They're old, grumpy, and they're pretty opinionated. Here's your hosts, it's Mark and Jamie!
Hello and welcome to episode 45, mid-40. Of the Carbcast. How you doing, Mark?
I'm fabulous. Shall I tell you where I am right now?
I can hear birds chirping in the background. It sounds very pleasant.
It does. You know, don't ask me what sort of birds they are. They're just noisy ones to me. But it does sound nice. I'm sat at the side of my favourite big pit. Just having another session down here. I got down here yesterday after work. I had a fish. I've just christened it the Lazy Linear. Honestly, mate, I thought it was a bream. I played it like a bream until it kind of had a little surge in the edge, but still not enough to make me convince it was a carp till I saw it. And then I was like, oh, got the net out. And it was like around 19, probably just under. Also, it's a repeat from last year, and I remember I had it last year. It fought like a nutcase, so...
Well,
yeah, it fought this time as well. Yeah, it fought this time as well when I got it in the bloody cradle for pictures. But while it was out there, and it was literally strange. I don't know if it's didn't know what was happening or just thought, oh, I can't be bothered, just take me a picture.
Well, maybe we'll have a Carbcast carp on the bank while we're recording this. It's possible.
Yeah, I've still got two. Two rods out, they're on a nice spot, there's fish in the area. The weather conditions are not great, but I've moved on to the shallows. There's a few fish mooching around, it's just whether they get their head down or not. I did contemplate putting a zig out there, but it's just too much floating weed and crap. I can just see the zig getting festooned with it before long. Also, the drop-off lead might not be a drop-off, because there's lots of, like, you know, your sticky algae stuff on the deck.
Yeah.
You know, you get a little bit of that around it, then it can make a mess of things, but they've not got too far to drop down, and, you know, the bait I'm on, it's well glugged up. There's not a lot of bait, but a lot of signal down there.
Cool.
And they like it, the breams that they do as well. Two bream double takes last night, and I'm looking forward to a good kip tonight, because I've night fished this swim before, and it's a day swim in morning, and I've never had a bream from it yet.
Famous last words.
Yeah, very last word, but I've got to be honest, one of the bream I had last night, I mean, it's not what I'm fishing for, and, you know, they just get unhooked in the edge and slip back for those who like to fish for them and enjoy them, but it was the biggest bream I've ever caught. It was huge. There's fish in here to, like, just under 17 pounds, and, well, I wouldn't like to hazard a guess, but I'd say it was 14, 15-ish. It was a proper slab. I had width as well.
Chunky bream.
Chunky bream. Chunky bream and a Lazy Linear.
Well, I've still not been out fishing the last couple of weeks, still doing the house. I apologise if you hear banging and noises in the background. The Tyler is in today doing the kitchen, so it marks hopefully the final week of work. Maybe I can get fishing next week. I'm not sure. I mean, May is the best month of the year, without doubt, every year. And I keep seeing fish getting caught all over the place. My news feed on Facebook's full of it, and it's makes me a little bit sad. I've not been out. I mean, it does. I've got a French trip booked end of next month, end of June. We're going to Luke Moffitt's Graviers. Not the greatest time of year to go there in June. They'll have already spawned, so there'll be nowhere world records. But the two big ones in there are still worth catching any time of year. So looking forward to that. But I don't know how much fishing I'm going to get done now, next couple of months. I've been speaking to Kevin Nash, a keen fan of the Carp Cast. He's been on a couple of episodes, as you know. He's had quite a few opinions on some of the stuff we've been talking about. He's, you know, agreeing and disagreeing with certain things that Mark and I say about certain topics, and wanted to give an opinion on some of the things. So we have our feature Hughes's News, where Rob Hughes is going to come on the penultimate show of every month, which is going to be next week. And what we thought we'd do is we'd give Kevin Nash a similar slot, maybe like a half an hour, 45 minute piece once a month, and he can give us his view on stuff we've discussed during that month. Well, he used to do something similar, didn't he, Mark, in Cartworld? It was it Thoughts from an Essex Monastery?
Yeah, that's one. I'm assuming that's a reference to his church lake, or, you know, I might be totally wrong there. I'm sure Kevin will correct me, but I'm reading that. It was an interesting column. He's one of those people. It's, you know, I'll read what he writes, and also I like to listen to what he has to say.
Yep, he's certainly opinionated and got a lot to say. So Kevin will be doing a monthly feature, where something similar to the thing he used to do in Carp Talk, we can keep us in the behind the scenes. So while we were discussing this the other day on the phone, you know, he was telling me about a situation there. I won't spoil it because he's going to discuss it obviously in his piece, but just the sort of stuff that goes on behind the scenes, where he's, you know, that they spend all day or weeks trying to like get something quite right on a particular item, and then, you know, there's a breakthrough or this. I don't want to spoil the story that he told me, but I thought it was a pretty good thing to kind of start us off. And then I don't know, I'm interested in, you know, how things work, how things are created, and the stuff we never get to hear, you know. It's like, why don't they just do this like that? And then you might find that there's 15 patents from 1942 or something that stop you doing it, you know. There's a hell of a lot goes on behind the scenes. And so in the interest of balance, while we're doing this, what we thought we would do is to approach a couple of the other major companies. Korda, Fox being kind of the two largest companies. I've written an open invitation to them too as well, offering them the same thing. So I'm offering them here if they would like to come on the show and do something similar. Just you know, keep us up to date once a month, maybe, on what's going on in the relative companies. Because while I am a Nash sponsored angler, or however you want to call it, sponsored field tester, who knows, consultant,
dog's body,
team maker, who knows, you know, I've had a good relationship with Nash for 12, 13 years now, but I like to think we're balanced, you know. If we do talk about other products positively and negatively, I like to think that you know, not every single item of tackle I use is Nash. I mean, quite a lot of it is, but I want to use the best item for what I'm doing. I'm not gonna cost myself it, or I'm not gonna not catch as many fish as I possibly could catch just for the sake of using a particular item. You know, if there was no Nash hook that suited my fishing, I'd use one that did, whoever made it. You know, I've always been like that. Although I do use Nash hooks, I use a twister for pretty much everything. It's my favourite hook, but we're not advertising twisters here. What I'm trying to say is I like to think we're balanced. So I think Kevin's got a lot to offer, but I am very cautious about, you know, I don't want people calling it the Nash Cast, which, you know, people have said before after his second appearance in 43 shows. So it was like, oh, it's the Nash Cast. And it's not, I mean... whether they were serious or not, I don't know. But, you know, We are trying to keep it balanced. So yeah, I've contacted Fox, contacted Corda as well. Obviously, good friends with Ali Hamidi, but it'd be nice to get Danny Fairbrass on once a month, wouldn't it? So yeah, we'll see how that develops. But you know, we have asked. But in the meantime, Kevin is definitely going to be coming on. He loves the Carpcast, and he has an opinion on some of the stuff we said. Some agreeing with us, some not. But yeah, I think it'd be good to get him on, discussing current affairs. You know, the general stuff that we chat about, and obviously can keep us updated with the goings on at Nash Tackle and the Lakes as well. I know he's telling me that a couple of lads absolutely had it off week before. On the Church Lake, and he started going deep in the conversation about water temperatures, and you know, he's never really kept a massive eye on that before, and he's just seen the change this last week, and he's just like, wow, it blew him away, the switch on. And I was like, stop talking, let's discuss this stuff so that everybody can hear. So that should be the last show of the month. Is just it's a week on Friday, isn't it? Anyway, moving on, quite a few things on the net this week. Have you seen anything, Mark?
It's on the net. It must be true.
Yeah, some, it's not in the notes, but it's quite fresh, but it's some quite disturbing news from over Manchester way. Oh, is it Liverpool? It's a murder on a park lake somewhere.
Yeah, it's on the Wirral, which is generally the posh side of Liverpool. There's a lake over the, let me find it now. There's a lake over there. Known as Claremont Farm in Bebbington. The emergency services were called at 9 a.m. to reports of two men arguing on arrival. They found an unresponsive 37-year-old man from Birkenhead. He was taken by air ambulance to hospital and unfortunately pronounced dead a short while later. Wow, I mean, I don't know what's caused this argument. I've heard rumours, seen on Facebook, people from the area posting that, you know, it was arguments over fishing, over a peg. It wasn't like two guys that hated each other and, you know, happened to bump into each other on the lake. I think it was a fishing related argument, or that's what reports appear to be indicating. I've seen it happen. I've seen rows on fishing lakes, you know, people casting over people and shouting across the lake. I saw a tweet from Crowe this morning. I don't know if you've seen it yet, Mark, on Twitter, from Simon Crowe.
I've not seen it yet, no.
No, basically saying there's a guy marching the opposite bank, opposite wherever he's fishing, like waving his hands about and, you know, clearly agitated and unhappy with where Crowe is casting. And Crowe is like, you know, get some glasses. I'm well in my water. We've seen that circumstance happen millions of times, you know, on lakes. But for it to escalate to the point of fighting, and then, you know, the danger with fighting is that somebody can get seriously hurt. You know, somebody can have a predisposition, they can have a heart attack, they can hit their head on something when they fall over, whatever. There's a million ways it can have an unfortunate end, and it appears that's what's happened here. A man's been arrested. We're going to find out what happens, I guess, in the future. It's a big difference between being beaten to a pulp, you know, to an inch of your life or worse, or just, you know, somebody hitting you and you sort of, you know, have a heart attack or bang your head or something. Either way, the outcome's the same. It shouldn't happen. It shouldn't happen. There's no excuse for it. And to get that worked up over fishing, I mean, have you ever been that worked up where you know... you're wanting each other's blood?
No, I'll be honest, I've had a few lively debates with people on the bank, but it's never come to blows.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, I've heard of a few instances, one involving a rather squeaky voiced Essex guy that lives in, not Essex, right, yeah, about him fighting on the bank with somebody else that we happen to know. Did we ever mention this?
I don't think we ever did, although I don't think it was a fight. A fight, it means there's like two combatants. I think if it one-sided, as it usually is.
I don't know how one-sided it was, actually. Well, I know said person, they'd had an argument on the previous lake, from across the lake, again, similar sort of thing to what we've just described. They'd had an argument, it got quite heated and threats were made, and then they bumped into each other sometime later on another lake, and the high-pitched voice squeaky guy ended up throwing a punch at my mate as he walked up to him, and they ended up fighting properly, to the point of they ended up in the water, but one of them threatening to squeal to the police. I mean, yeah, that's enough said. There's no need for it. There is no need at all.
No, definitely not. There's, you know, even if you don't like the person and whatever dispute is, have an adult discussion. Have a row. There's no need to start throwing punches. That just, I think it says more about the people involved in this situation.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Obviously, our thoughts go out to the family of the dead guy. I mean,
definitely.
You know, we don't know the situation yet. But come on, guys, it's only fishing. Do we ever need to get that wound up to the point of you know, injuring somebody? You might want to. You might think about it, but come on, it's just not needed. Moving on.
Definitely not.
Something else seen on the net, Mark?
It's on the net. It must be true.
Yeah, and also on the net is the rolling saga of the Carp Society seems to have taken another twist. Have you seen this? I've seen it on Derek Stritton's Facebook.
Yes, I did. I saw Marsh Prattley share a post from Derek Stritton.
That's the one.
It appears from what it looks like is that the life members have, because bear in mind that I think the only members currently, like normal members of the club, are the people on the board, the directors, which basically means they've removed the members, they've removed the ability for anyone to be voted out or any sort of democracy. And I think what's happened is the life members have got together. I think there's 24 life members, and 20 of them have got together, called an emergency general meeting, an EGM, invited the directors who didn't turn up. They called an emergency general meeting and voted four of the members stroke directors out, including Malcolm Collar. Been voted off the board. I presume they're going to say that life members don't have a vote. I presume there's going to be some sort of defence against this. But I mean, why have, like, you know, the whole point of having life members is for this exact reason, you know, for you're giving people that have helped and had input, helped create an organisation, and you know, you've honoured that by giving them a life membership, which surely includes having a say in how the society is run in the future. And that appears to be what's happened. I don't know why this didn't happen some time ago, because if this was an option on the table, I mean, maybe it took a while to actually gather up all the life members. I'm sure the current board, you know, if this was one of the ways that they could be stopped doing what they were attempting to do, which is to, you know, cash all the assets in and you know, split all the money up from Horseshoe Lake and any other assets the society's got. But anyway, it appears they've been voted out. I'm sure we're going to see some sort of defence against that. But apparently, you know, I have it in good authority that life members of any society do have a vote. There is law, you know, test cases in law to say that. And I presume all the bank accounts are going to be frozen. I'm presuming the credit cards will be stopped for the account, and I'm sure there's going to be a bit of legal wrangling. But it appears that that maybe this situation's moved on considerably. I know Marsh Prattley seemed to be one of the you know, the instigators, enforcers, whatever you may, who's been down there and been very vocal about it since. I've had no press release as yet. I'm sure we're going to get one over the next week from Tim Paisley. I'm sure he's going to make a statement very soon. At the minute, all I've seen is what I've seen on the net. But yeah, looks like a development.
Yeah, that's certainly sounds like a better one than them trying to revoke Tim Paisley's life membership after everything he's done for fishing, carp fishing.
Well, isn't that the whole point of a life membership? You shouldn't be able to revoke it, you know.
Yeah, the word life kind of gives it away. It's like an honour, you know, bestowed on people who've earned it.
Yeah,
you don't just remove them if you disagree with them.
No, and even if they attempted to remove them, there's been a vote now. I mean, the only argument I can see is if they say, well, life members don't have a vote. But I think there is, you know, there is case law that says, yes, they do in all other circumstances. So why would this be any different? In which case, it could only ever be a 20-6 vote. So they ain't going to win the existing. So it looks like democracy has won. Which is obviously what we want to see.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, well, hope we're
sit with his popcorn and wait with bated breath.
Yeah. Anything else on the net?
Yeah, I did see this one. A little bit of a fun thing. The Manchester Tackle Shop gets quite a cool Facebook with graffiti artist Dusto. Have you heard of him?
Yes, I've not heard of him. No, I did see the picture. It's is it not Fishing Republic?
It's on the net. It must be true.
It is a Manchester branch, and it went from. And they have been criticised in the past for the appearance of the shop, which is just a blue brick wall with a couple of pretty bland signs. And now it's you can't miss it. And yeah, you know, there's an interesting video on YouTube on Dusto's own channel. I think if you just search Dusto, and I think it's Urban Carp or Massive Urban Carp or something like that for the video, and it shows you him doing it all, and it's a few minutes long, but it's quite interesting because, say, did you ever do graffiti as a kid?
No, never any good at art, but I appreciate it, that's for sure. We have graffiti artists that come to Blackpool every year and they paint a load of the buildings. I think the council get them in to do them, and you know, they're fantastic, some of them, and they change every year. We get a new set, but there's always pictures of them going around Facebook when they're first done. But yeah, it's certainly a skill.
Definitely. I've also worked for Fishing Republic in the Doncaster branch, and I've already spoke to the manager saying, get this done here.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be nice. Give our shop an uplift as well. So if you're listening, Richard, get him over.
I believe you've been speaking to a guest this week, haven't you?
I have. I've gone one for another one of the young big carp stars. Young... from Scott Lloyd, who was on the cover of Carp Talk last week, and he speaks well. I had an interesting chat with him. He's got, for a young lad, 27, he's got experience beyond his years, and I like his what he says about observations of carp and just ways of tricking some of the tricky carp, if you know what I mean.
Well, we shall get Scott on very shortly. In the meantime, we've got our DNA. DNA tip of the week coming up. Rob Hughes this week. Rob Hughes gave us a few fantastic tips that he's learned from his underwater diving, and obviously his relationship with DNA. If you want to try out any of the DNA stuff, DNABaits.com is the website to go to, and you can get an extra discount on their already decent prices. You can get an extra discount when you check out. CarpCast5 is the code that you use, and you'll get an extra 5% discount on any of the post-free deals or anything you can find on that site. Post-free deals are the most popular ones, the boilies. They do loads of decent flavours. Do the Secret 7, the Nutter S, the SLK or Ocean X, and the new one that everybody's raving about is the Switch. In the post-free deal, you get a boilie of your choice, including 3 kilos of matching pellets or stick mix, tub of pop-ups, tub of wafters, and 250 ml of bait soak. There's a 5 kilo deal for $59.99, 10 kilos $94.99, 20 kilo deal $149.99, and a 50 kilo deal at £320. They're all post free to your door, and you can get an extra discount off that with the code CARPCAST5 when you check out. All sorts of other stuff. They do a Zig deal, which is the Fox Zig aligners, sticky sweet liquid, 2.5 kg of spod mix, £30 post free to your door. Don't forget to use the code for the extra discount. There's the fluoro pop-ups that Rob Hughes went into detail on his first DNA tip of the week. They've got a massive range of liquids on there, including the really popular Hydro Wheat, which Mark Holmes spoke about on a previous show. Go to the website dnabaits.com and use the code CARPCAST5 when you check out. And here is Rob with his DNA tip of the week.
DNA tip of the week.
Well, my DNA tip of the week is, if you haven't had a look at it yet, get on the Switch. It's an unbelievable boilie that if your lake hasn't seen it before, really it's gonna smash it. I couldn't believe it, and I've heard so much hype about boilies before now, and you've got to get on this because it's great, etc., etc. And those people that listen to me will know that I don't overplug stuff, but believe me, this Switch is definitely something different. First time I used it, I was out with a mate of mine, Neil Rivers, British champion, one of the gold medalists with us in the England team. Went away to France last year. I was catching a few on my bait. He was catching a few on his bait, but he seemed to be catching the bigger ones. And I managed to nail a bit of Switch off him. And would you believe it, the first two fish that I caught on it were the two biggest fish that I caught for the whole trip. It's absolutely incredible. But we have a particular way of fishing it. Boilies on their own work very, very well. But if you use the Switch liquid with it as well, get some boilies, crush them up almost into dust, get some more boilies, break them into crumb, and then get some more boilies and just break them into halves. Put them in a bait tub. Put a load of the bait soak, the liquid, over the top of it. Not so it's completely soaked, but just so it's really, really, really squidgy moist. Then very lightly make some sausages up, just some standard sticks, just like you would do with a normal stick mix. But instead of using ground bait that's compacted, you're using a mix of broken down, semi-broken down, and half boilies. And then what happens is that when you cast that in, it breaks down and forms a nicer pile with more food items on the bottom, and it doesn't waft off as much as just straightforward ground bait is. But the key one with this is, without any shadow of doubt, that Switch liquid. It's so attractive to fish, and there's not many liquids that I've seen that are as attractive as this one. It really, really is an absolute winner. So get some boilies, crush them up, make yourself a stick, glug them up with the Switch liquid, bang that out. Particularly over silt, it seems to work really, really, really well over silt. It'll work over gravel, of course, but you know what silt's like. Sometimes it can suck the flavour and suck the smell out of the bait. Not with this. It's an absolutely devastating bait over the top of that sort of bottom.
DNA tip of the week.
Feels like I'm in love. Just had the first time I met you.
I'm going to welcome to this week's Carp Cast one of the young guns on the big carp scene, young Scott Lloyd. How are you, Scott?
I'm all right, mate. Not so young anymore.
Oh, how old are you?
27 last week, on Friday.
27? Well, to me, that's young. You've still got your mother's milk wet on your face. So
yeah, true that.
When you get to my age. But now, 27, you've had some cracky fish. So let's get... I'm going to stop moving on this creaky chair. So let's wind the clock a bit. Where did it all start for you? Where's this fascination with chasing these big carp?
I fished for as long as I can remember, really. Just sort of starting out on the old whip pole and that on the canals and as a kid, and just went on from there, really. You know, the bigger the fish get and the more fight, you just get interested more and more, gets grippier. It all started local, mate. Fished a few of the local parks and farm ponds around here. I mean, even through school and things like that. I mean, at one point I was like bagging it off school and going down in one shower and things like that, as you do.
Oh, definitely.
And then I haven't really done much local stuff. I did a lot, but not so much the bigger waters, like with the bigger fish. And I'm kind of thankful for that, really, because I've got them for the way of running life. You know, if I go on to have kids and things like that, I've got them local waters. Because I see so many lads these days, as soon as they have kids, they go off the radar and no more fishing anymore, isn't it?
Yeah, I know what you mean. I've seen a lot of friends do that. But having said that, it's all about getting that balance in. You know, a lot of people, kids ain't a bad thing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you've got to prioritise things. But at the moment, as I say, I haven't got any kids or anything like that, so it gives me the means to travel. But yeah, like I was saying, started locally, and then as soon as I was sort of old enough and knew a few of the lads going down sort of south, started venturing down to Oxford. And that's where it all began, really, right? On the old linear fisheries, day ticket.
Oh, nice.
I've
got to be honest, I've only had one trip down there. It was one of these old Nash Road shows that I used to do when I was with Evan. It was on the far side of Brasenose, and you're looking down, and there's like a bivvy, then a bivvy, and a bivvy, and a bivvy, and a bivvy, and I didn't even put my rods out at night. I just sat with McKenzie and Birchie and a couple of the lads and had a laugh.
Yeah, it sounds like a long time ago, but it's still the same.
Yeah.
And was that like back in the 60s?
I think back in the 60s, those pits were fields.
Yeah, to be fair, they probably were, mate.
In fact, back in the 60s, I didn't exist, so... You may be young and you may be at the other end of a phone line, but don't get too cocky.
I will. Yeah, just for the listeners anyway, yeah. He's a lot better looking than his voice sounds anyway.
Oh, I'm glad you said that. I personally think I've got a great face for a podcast, but...
Like I was saying, yeah, it started in Oxford over on Winnie Fisheries. I started on St. John's. I think back then, before a lot of the other... water started kicking off for big fish. Back then, that was the big fish war, obviously, big common, box common, big plated being the top one. So started on there, which was a big shock from fishing around here in muddy farm ponds.
Yeah, in what way? Just how busy it was?
Everything. I mean, just starting from your end tackle, really. I mean, how crystal clear the water is. I remember walking onto St. John's on a no fishing bank and seeing the bottom. I thought, what is that? I'm not used to seeing that, so I thought my end tackle's going to stick out like a sore thumb.
And did it?
I mean, I didn't let it faze me, because I always caught well around here, and it's one of the main things I say to people these days, you know, when people are writing to me on Facebook and things like, how should I approach going down to Winnier for my first time, for example, and I just say, well, don't change anything, you know, just if you're catching locally and whatever you're doing's working... stick to it and don't mess around with too much at first, you know, and use that as plan B, you know. If it doesn't work, then think about changing things. Too many people get drawn into watching the media side of things and the DVDs. All of a sudden they've got to get marker rods and all things like that. And I just think if you're catching, doing your own thing, try that first. But, I went on there and I tried doing my own thing and it didn't work, so... Yeah,
I can relate to that. And this is back when I went on Elstow 1. You know, the thing on there, you'll have seen it on St. John's, you know, because a few of the lads from Pit 1 have done really well on there. But it's like three rods, bang, 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 so tight on a spot, spot up as tight as you can, and, you know, fish with multiple hits. And when I went on Pit 1, I just thought, I don't like that, I'm going to fish my own way. And I actually went through quite a series of blanks until...
Oh, yeah.
I started fishing like the clones, basically. And the first two fish were 40s. So that's how to make friends and influence people in a new syndicate.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it pays to be different, you know. As long as it's the right way, it pays to be different, definitely. But sometimes, like you say there, you just got to get in with whatever's happening. Yeah, well, I did it. I mean, I ended up whittling my tackle down. Everything I didn't need, I got rid of. You know, i.e., like... leaders and things. I was using a lot of lead core and things back then, which I've now gone on to strip right down. I went on there with high hopes, thinking, I'm the daddy, I've caught everything around my way, you know, for what I'd fish for, and it soon kicked in that it wasn't going to be the way around there.
Yeah, I know, it is excuse the French, but it's a bit of a head fuck.
Oh, definitely, yeah. But yeah, I soon got into the swing of things. I mean, I knew a lot of the basics, and I was well keen as well. And that was the thing. I had, I mean, like I was only sort of 17 then as well when I started venturing down there. So obviously I was getting lists with friends and whoever else was going down, or just even getting dropped off. Like, get my mum take me down there, ram all the gear in the car and just get me dropped off down there. I didn't really care about when I was coming back. It was just when I was getting there.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
Yeah, I did. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, my mum's been a blessing with fishing, really. Ever since I can remember, she used to come with us, just sit there and not even bother. And she's definitely helped me along the way, keep me off the streets and out of trouble.
Yeah, that's a great thing with fishing. It does keep you out of, well, it certainly did with me as a young'un, coming up. But yeah, getting back to St John's, was there any well-known anglers fishing it at the time? You know, people that you learnt off?
At the time, no. I'd met a few lads down there that I sort of walked up to, yeah, but at the time everyone had sort of moved on. You know, the days of sort of the older school lads sort of fishing there, that had all been done and dusted and they were moving on to things, so it was just more of a day ticket. There was just more people like me. The odd sort of so-called famous angler on there that you sort of just walk past like, oh my God, who's that?
I
didn't really pay much attention. I was just trying to concentrate on doing my own thing. I soon got into the grips of it. You know, I didn't really know much about feeling wedged down and all that. That all sort of came along at the same sort of time, you know, like round our way, so. 2-3 foot waters around here, you don't even get a chance to feel the wedge down. You know, and even when it does, it goes into about 6 foot silt.
Yeah, so were there any well-known anglers or good anglers on there that you could look up to, learn off of at that time?
Not really, mate. A lot of the old school anglers that had sort of been and gone, you know, like your likes of Terry Earn and people like that, they'd already done Wynyard Fisheries before it was even known. So yeah, there was some good anglers on there, and the lads that were catching, they were the lads that I was sort of paying attention to and seeing what they were doing. And but I was still sort of doing my own thing. I knew that I needed to whittle my tackle down and make it more appropriate for a clear water, but apart from that, my fishing was bang on, location being the main thing.
Yeah, could you move swims if needed, or was it too busy then?
It was busy, but I was lucky enough. I was getting down midweek because I was working shifts, as I still do now, on the railway.
Yeah.
So I was getting a lot of midweek off, working long weekends, 12-hour shifts, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then being able to get down there on the Monday. So that was perfect. You know, there was a few angles on, but the ones that were down midweek were keen. But it still got busy, but I always found the furthest swims away from the car park were the ones that you could always get into.
That's like most lakes, especially day ticket gaffs.
Yeah, definitely. But I'm not knocking anyone like that. It's each to their own with fishing.
Yeah,
you know, if you want to go down there, just get away from the wife and the kids and have a few beers and a barbecue and that, then it's each to their own. As long as you've got fish care, that's the only thing that sort of boils my piss, so to speak. But as long as they've got fish care, then it's each to their own, however they want to go about it.
Can't argue with any of that. So, did you start catching from the off, or was it a bit of an eye-opener?
I'd say the first couple of sessions, I really struggled, and that was definitely down to my end tackle that I was using. I've always, even round here, I fish on location, on locating the fish first. I always say that's number one, location, and then going on from that, it's obviously your end tackle about the last 6 foot. Location was bang on, but picking up bites wasn't. But what kept me going was I was seeing fish on the bank. I knew what was in there, obviously. And I just carried on. And first couple of sessions were a blank, but I'd seen quite a few fish pot on the bank. Some of the better ones, one of my mates had the Starburst mirror in there. That was about £39 at the time.
Yeah.
This is about 2009, I think it was. So,
yeah.
Talking a bit ago.
Yeah, years.
Yeah, so, as soon as I started whittling my end tackle down, started using, like, fluorocarbon leaders, stripping off everything, pretty much, you know, non-lead core, fine-tuning my rigs, and, fishing away from the car park, and I was getting to know the fish more, you know, their sort of personalities and what they were doing in certain conditions and pressures. Like line pressure, I'm talking about how many people were on. They were reacting different to, well, like dependent, and regardless of conditions, really. If there was a lot of people, at a certain end of the lake, the fish wouldn't stand for it. And I noticed that straight away, and sometimes I'd even just fish one rod, you know, super slack in a swim, and it's just something I'd not seen before, whereas usually everyone down there is using three rods. So they definitely wise up to them lines in the water, and I was picking up on that, definitely. Yeah, but when I really started getting a grip of it, I was starting to pick up a few fish. I was fishing a swim known as the Life Buoy, and that is literally the furthest swim from the car park. It has the channel. You've got a shallower end and then a channel leading to the deeper end.
Yeah.
And it's where it shelves off into the deeper water. It was perfect. It was a massive silt gully that built up there, and the fish loved it. And it was a perfect sort of ambush point from when the fish came out of the showers in the day into the deeper water for the night. I was picking them up there at the night and was focusing my attention in the day down the shallow end. So I was moving back and forth. I'd have my main camp in the Life Buoy. And then as soon as sort of bite time in the morning went, I'd move down into the shower end.
Yeah, sounds like a plan. And yeah, were you seeing some of the better fish? Were they visiting you or showing you the area?
I was on. See, the thing what I was doing at the time, I was doing what everyone would normally do. You know, I was baiting an area. I'm fishing two rods tight on it,
yeah.
or three rods, or even one rod sometimes, like I said before. But yeah, I was trying to bait as tight as I could and put my rods all on it. But I had this thing about I was catching a lot of this and the stocky fish, and I just wanted to. I know that fish have all got their own sort of personalities, especially the wiser old fish. You know, I can't speak for every fish, but the ones that have seen every trick in the book, you know, they're more wise to what's going on. So I wanted to see the fish that I was after feeding, i.e. the big plated and a couple of the common small plated.
Yeah.
So what I did is you've got a swim known as Henman Hill. It's the only sort of snags in there straight across from it is the snags. So what I started doing was baiting. I was going around the back of the snags, and there was a hole in the bush that I could chuck bait through onto a spot. So I was doing that. I wanted to see this fish feed. I wanted to sort of get to know its personality, what it was doing. So I was baiting through these trees, and I'd sit up in the trees watching all the fish come in. A couple of the better ones did come in. They'd have a mooch over it first, and then they'd start getting drawn into it. I saw the big common drop down and start feeding on the side of the spot, but not the big pointed, and that was the one I was really after. You know, I just thought that is the one. So yeah, I kept doing it for a few days, and I was getting fish from fishing the Life Buoy and moving into the showers, a swim known as poachers. It was a rarely fish swim because it was past Hemming Hill, but before the big double, so it wasn't very popular. People who have fished down the past don't know where it is, where I'm on about, but yeah, it's in the shallow end. So anyway, yeah, I kept baiting. I kept when I was up the tree watching this spot, I kept seeing fish. Like in the snags, right under the bushes. But this one fish, it looked like a good fish, kept just sort of sitting there and just not really doing much, and it'd just mooch off under the snags and go away. So I thought, yeah. I need to see what fish this is. And I've got down and sort of lay across the bushes and like got literally 2 foot my face from the water with the glasses on. And yeah, it came back in and dropped the set. I thought, what's it doing? It's eating bait. And what it was is it was my bait, but it was the ones that was hitting the branches and falling straight through, straight under the bushes. And it turned out it was the big plated.
Oh, nice.
You sneaky little, you sneaky little Russian. So, yeah. So straight away I thought, right, I know what's going on here. All the stockies, the smaller fish, the ones that I didn't really want to catch, were eating the bait straight off the spot. They were coming in, they were competitive feeding, and the big plated was coming in, and it was picking off these little singles. So I thought, right, I know what I need to do. I need to find a good area, bait a main spot, and fish off the bait. And from that day, that's what I did. I'd bait a spot, and I'd fish off it. I'm talking 6, 8, 12 feet off it, depending on the spot. But yeah, both the spots that I was fishing, in the Life Buoy swim and in the poachers, were both allowing me to do that. So I just carried on, and I mean, there's a bit of a story behind it as well,
yeah.
On one particular day, I'd had a few fish in the night in the Life Buoy, packed down as a ward. I've gone down to the shower, and it was a real sunny day. The pressure was right up, and I've seen some fish just sunning themselves. I was looking off the sort of no fishing bank down in the Henman Hillside, I've seen these fish just sat there, so I got some mixers, because it was good on the surface. I had a few off the surface, got some mixers, just pinged them out over the top of them, and all the fish sort of scattered off quite fast. I thought, I've blown out. But this one fish just sort of swam away and then came backwards towards me. Just looked so... I just thought, that's not right. So I did it again, and it's tried to swim away and come back backwards again. I thought, that's tethered. So I've got one of my rods cast over the line from the no fishing bank, and I've picked up the line, so I've started playing it in. Next minute, Roy's come round, Roy Parsons, the bailiff, and he's not into anyone fishing off the no fishing bank. He's giving him, "Right, Scott, you can't fish off there." I was like, "No, calm down, Roy." I said, "It's a fish tethered. I've just cast over it." And it, fair play to him, he was straight through all the brambles with the landing net, got down there in the water, landed it up. We got it on. It was only like a mid-double, but his mouth damage was really bad. It still had the lead on. And yeah, landed it up and treated it up and let it go. And Roy said, like, I remember his words, he was like, the carp gods will repay you for that one. And then, so I sat there, got in that poacher swim the same day, got my rods out, I was fishing, real tight spot in the weed was getting up quite a bit. This was, well, yeah, it was up and ready to go, really. It was like October time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was baiting a main spot that was probably the size of a couple of unhooking mats, and I had a little spot off the side of it. It was probably, I'd say, an unhooking mat size, and that's where I was putting my single, i.e. fishing for the big pointed. I was picking other fish up off it. It's not like it wasn't going. I was picking other fish up off it, but I was just fishing the one rod in that swim off the side of the bait. And Roy come round later that night, and it was about 6-7 o'clock. Obviously, it's long nights then.
Yeah.
And he said, you can have free fishing for tonight because of what he did with that fish. And I thought, oh, happy days. And he said, give me a call if you get it. And I think it was getting on for it was getting on just before dusk. It was because ended up, yeah, it was definitely just before dusk. And I seen a fish just show on right on the rod, and I thought, I'll give it another half an hour before dark, because if we can get the rods out in the lifebuoy, no problem, because I've done it so many times. And literally half an hour later, the rod was away. Bit of a battle with it, but just thumping around, and went in the net, and there it was, big pointed. Couldn't believe it.
Wow, that is a case of the carp gods giveth.
Oh, definitely. I rung Roy up straight away. I was like, Roy, you're not going to believe me, because he said if you ever get it, ring him. And he came down, got it on the scales, and it turned out to be a complex record at the time, which has been smashed now by that big common. But yeah, it was a 44 pound 10 ounce.
Nice, and that is, it's probably the most famous carp in the country after Underwater 7 that Corder put out.
Oh, definitely, yeah, definitely. I mean, even if you watch them DVDs, I haven't seen them fully, but if you watch them back, the big plate, it doesn't just go straight in on the spot. It does visit the area and pick off the side first. You know, it shows a bit of interest.
Yeah.
Rather than just going straight into it. And I always think when I see people catching it all the time, I mean, it's a big fish. It's got to eat. It's always going to come out, no matter how clever it is, because of how pressured it is. But, yeah, people catch it all the time, and people might... count themselves as not so capable anglers, but they do catch it. And I think the reason for that is because maybe they've not been so accurate to hit the bait, and it's gone off the spot. And I always think that's why, because it's gone off the spot and they've picked it up.
That does make sense. I remember when I was watching Underwater 7, I wasn't taking much notice of the fish behaviour. I was just taking it for like the entertainment value and shouting at the screen a bit, saying, put a proper rig on. Just my own personal opinion, that one. Not slagging.
I've got no comment on that. Sorry, mate.
even though you know that the fully plated is going to get caught sooner or later, that first time it turns up, you know, you're like, you're on your edge of your seat. It's like, go on.
Yeah.
You know it's going to happen, but you know that's. I've got to be honest. I think that that's 7. I've not even watched 8 yet, but I think they're brilliant viewing.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, for people to see under the water what the fish are actually doing is brilliant, because people who are non-anglers or just coming into it, for them to see how clever these fish are, they're not just like so-called pigs in a pond or like goldfish with 3-second memories. They have actually got a bit of a clue and they know what's going on. So it is good to see the behaviours of the fish underwater. I mean, I've seen a lot of it over the years anyway, myself, because I'm a quite a good tree climber. So I've seen. you're the size of a tree. You don't need to climb any.
Yeah, it is an advantage. But yeah, I've also got blamed for breaking one of the best branches to stand on around St Ives Lagoon as well.
Oh, don't I don't like it when people break my branches. Honestly. I've gone to some of my trees before and found foot pegs wound into the tree, and I thought, I'm not having that, so I've had to wind them out. If you can't climb them, you're not allowed.
Yeah, I've still got the spirit to climb, but I hover around between 17 and a half and 18 stone, and it doesn't lend itself to little spindly branches.
Yeah, that's not going to do you any favours. No. Yeah, I mean, I'm quite blessed. I've climbed trees all my life anyway, from when I was younger. I was always the lad going up to tie the rope for the tarsy, if you know what I mean. But yeah, and I work at height as well on the railway. Work on overhead lines, do a lot of climbing with that, so yeah. But yeah, just for the purpose of people who do want to climb trees, I'd definitely say if you don't feel safe, don't do it, you know.
Yeah, do a risk assessment. Yeah. We're in that day and age of health and safety.
Yeah. Always wear your harness. Keep 4 points of contact.
You've been doing risk assessments at work, haven't you?
Yeah, always, yeah. Have a phone nearby to ring 999 so you get the fire brigade out.
Yeah. Oh, do you know a kid called Mark Rabo?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Yeah, do you know the story of him in the wool pack?
I've got a bit of a story about him myself and more recently, but go on.
Yeah, he was a swim called First on Five. I mean, he's a fireman, he's a big old unit, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
Yeah, and he's up the tree at the right of First on Five, and he came crashing down and landed on the branch he was stood on, cracked a couple of ribs and ruptured his spleen, I think he did. I'm sure he'll correct me if I'm wrong because he listens. But he packed his gear up, buried it back to the car park and drove on back to Manchester before he sought any medical help.
Oh, fair play.
Yeah, but the week before, he's caught paddle. So it was a carp gods giveth and taketh away.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, it was his first session, I believe. You caught paddling your first session. He's taking the piss a bit, so the carp gods just flicked him out of that tree.
Yeah, maybe that's what he was saying. You're red carded, mate. You need to get off. You've had paddle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go on, you had a Robbo story. Is that a good one while we're on him?
are we picking on him now?
Yeah, why not?
What it is recently on Stone Acres, he's been having a bit of an hard time getting on the fit. Well, he's been getting on them, but he's not been picking them up. And long story short, I had 90 metres of rope that I'd bought because I was doing like a washing line from Island Point, which looks directly at the island, and it's about 80 metres away. Yeah. So what I was doing, because the geese land there at night, I was tying a rope from Island Point, from the swim, from a tree, all the way to the island, and then I could run my line at the side of this rope. So when the geese were coming in to land, they'd see the rope and wouldn't hit my line. So I was literally like fishing a 80 metre spot, but with no line in the water, you know, to a storm pole. So just washing line it over. So the rope was helping me out.
Oh,
yeah. But anyway, yeah, we were having a social, and there's a picture of me because Andy Edwards, one of the lads, he's good with the camera, and he always bring if we're having a bit of a social, whatever, he'll bring his camera around. And I said I don't need this 90 meter because I've recently pulled off there anyway, which I'm sure we'll come to in a bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've pulled this 90 meters of rope out of the van and said, "Does anyone want me rope? Because I won't need it anymore." And I've gone to hand it to Rabo, and Andy's took a picture of me handing it to him, and I said, "You might need 6 foot of this the way you're going on it, yeah, to get yourself in the tree." sort of end it. And he didn't seem too happy about that, but it was all good laugh. He's a good lad. He can take the banner and he can give it as well. So.
Oh, yeah. See, I don't know him massively well, just from the world pack, and he was a good company. Man, the first time I met him, I've taken pictures of bloody paddle for him, so...
Yeah, that's
and I went on the other side and I'm taking pictures of the carving for another fella. I've not even got my rods out yet. I'm the pictures of the two best fish in the lake.
Yeah, well, that's always a good thing to get you keen on the lake, though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, I do. I enjoy other people's captures as much as my own nowadays.
Oh, definitely. I'm always the same. Someone rings me up, says I've got a fish on the other side of the lake. I'll happily wind in, depending on the time, obviously. Wind in and take all the cameras around and things. I mean, I always video everyone's captures because I just think it's good to have. We only get these few minutes on the bank with them, so why not get everything we can, recording them, picturing them, before we get them back.
Making even videos nowadays, it's so easy, even I can do it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's got to be easy then.
You sound surprised.
Yeah, but like I say, all the time and effort and the hours that we put in is nothing, like literally zero compared to like the minutes that we get on the bank with them. It's crazy, really.
Yeah, we've got to save that moment, because once you've had that moment, you know, no one can take it away from you, and it's nice to relive it, you know, not even show it off to your mates. Or I've got captures that I've never put out there or never put on Facebook, despite being a media hall like I am. I've got a few captures that I've just kept back, and well, it's just personal as well. Anyway, let's get back to your fishing, because I'm going a bit self-indulgent there.
No, it's not like you.
What do you mean?
Oh, go on.
You've had the plated.
I've had the plated. This was October time, sort of mid October, and I was still keen on there. There was a few of the others that I wanted, but I definitely wanted to go over to Manor as well. There was a couple of the fish over there that I wanted. In the back of my mind, I mean, I had a bit of a plan of where I wanted to go. But I'll stick to the story. Yeah, I finished up on there. I ended up having a few more fish, doing the same tactic, and I went over. I did come back. I left it for the winter, let the dust build up on the rods. I was a part-timer back then. But yeah, I came back in the spring, started on St. John's again. I had a couple because I remember the Manor was fishing real slow. It does every year. So St. John's will pick up first on the zigs, etc. And then I was sort of waiting for the first couple to come out of the Manor. So yeah, I had a few on the zigs, and around this time when I started meeting a few of the so-called, the sort of known lads. I met Dan Wildboar and Miles. Miles is a lad from around our way, but I'd still not met him. But yeah, I met him down there, and yeah, I was starting to sort of get in with a few of the lads and doing my own thing still. And I end up venturing over to Manor as soon as the first couple started coming out. Went over there, and there was a fish called Spike, and it was a real rare one at the time. In recent years, it seems to be come out quite a lot, but I think that's down to the sheer size of it. It's been going massive.
If it comes out quite a lot, I might have a go.
Yeah, you'll just end up doing pictures of it for someone.
Usually three or four times first.
Yeah, I've been on the receiving end of that one myself a few times. But it's always good because, like I say, it gets you keen, doesn't it?
Yeah,
the prize is there.
Yeah,
and they always seem to wink at you, like when you're doing the pictures. Yeah, I've had that. But I went over onto the Manor, and I took the same approach over there, fishing off the bait, because obviously they're the same fish. There's a lot of Simmons fish in there, and they seem to be real preoccupied with getting straight on the bait. It was always competitive feeding, and I had this image in my mind, what I'd seen from the big plated, that they were these original fish were holding back, you know, letting the Simmons or the stockies be the mugs almost, you know, where go and pick up the rigs, and then we'll come in as soon as you run off with a lead in tow. I went over there with the same approach, and I was picking up the better fish straight away. I mean, I had a few simos along the way, but yeah, I had the Hardwick linear and a fish called Blind Eye within the first few nights. And then the next, I think it was the next night, or the next session, I think it was, actually, I had Spike.
Nice.
39-14, which was quite carrying with the scales. I could have chucked a little lead in there to make it 40, but I didn't.
Call it 40.
No, I don't do the old bouncy scales like a few people.
You've not got the foot strap sling.
I haven't got one of them yet.
I remember that fish, he was on Chile Court, didn't he, on one of the Fox videos a year or two ago.
And
it does look a cracking fish, but
it is definitely. I mean, I even stayed on there because there's a few more, and obviously because I'd caught them so early in the season, I thought, where do I go next? I wasn't really interested in the Braes, Nose Wakes or Oxleys at the time. Yeah, because, I mean,
just a quick question, a couple of questions before we get off the Manor and your style of fishing on there. Is the birthmark linear still around? Because that is one hell of a fish.
I think it is, but it hasn't been out for, is it a couple of seasons now?
It's one that you see in the press and think, oh,
I know it. I don't think it came out last year, and a few people are like umming and ahhing of its whereabouts because it does like a catcher. Yeah, but yeah, it's not been out. But I'd say it's still in there. There's nothing to say it's not.
Yeah, so. Cool. And the other one, where you're fishing your single up bait just off your baited area, is it a pop-up bottom bait, a bright pop-up, or are you same as your feed bait?
Yeah, just what I was doing, I was using, what was he on at the time? I was on the cell. I was using mainline. That was literally just first come out. I'm pretty sure it had just come out then. And, it was doing wonders all over the place. And I was still, like, I was paying for my bait. It was, like, £10 a kilo or what have you. And I was going down. I think I was taking, like, 2 kilo and then making my own particle up. But I was using just tigers as my particle. I wasn't putting anything else in because I love tiger nuts. I was making probably 3-4 kilos, boiling 3-4 kilos of tiger nuts up and just blending them up in the blender at home. Well, I was getting my mum to do it, but. Yeah,
sounds like you've got a good mother.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, honestly, she's a diamond. But yeah, she was doing that, and then it'd go really well with the cell because it's quite a it's like a milk protein nutty bait itself, and it'd go real well. So it was I was fair. I was probably giving it sort of probably about half a kilo, you know, to start off on the spot.
Yeah.
This is obviously mixed tiger and cell, and then off the side of it, I'd fish a little balanced tiger just with a little bit of corking, just enough to take the weight off the hook, off the rig.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'd fish like two little tiny pieces of chopped tiger and a little sliver of cork between them, just somewhat sneaky, because you got to imagine with crushed tiger, it's little tiny pieces and it keeps them, gets them preoccupied. Whereas if you put 2 kilo of boilers out, they could be in a lake like that with a stock like that, they'll be gone in 10 minutes if they're having it. Literally that quick. So if you give them something like mushed up, I always like that mushed up sort of look. So it's just like little bits and bobs everywhere and it's going to take them a while. And it just gets that cloud going through the water, bits flying everywhere, it starts to mask everything, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And I've got to admit, it's not a style of fishing I've done myself for a while, but that's because I've been fishing a lake that's got herds of monster bream in.
Ooh.
Yeah.
They can be a pain.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's literally, well, there's a ridiculous catch one of the bream lads had the other week. 21 bream, 19 doubles.
Whoa. Yeah. See, I don't mind a big bream. I don't mind big specimens. I mean, I don't want to sound like I'm all carp. I have done a lot of specimen fishing over the years, just more so carp this day and age. But yeah, I've picked some big bream up. I mean, I've had some big ones from Stone Acres and big tench as well, like up to sort of 18, 19 pound bream wise.
Yeah, I've got to be honest. I mean, that catch, that fella out to me. I'm not a fan of big bream when I'm after carp, but my God, they are impressive fish. I'd love to be sat there with a feeder rod catching them.
Oh yeah, they give you a little bit of an head bob. I mean, on the carp rods these days, you just sort of wind them in.
Yeah, we've got my new 13 foot, 3.5 pounders. It's not much of a challenge to wind a bream in.
Yeah, what them you got? You got the air curves, have you?
Oh yeah, without a doubt, mate. You know, we're no bias at all, no attachment to grade, but they are the best rod I've used. But anyway.
Yeah, I've heard some good things. Yeah, go on.
I'll recommend them to you. They are good. Yeah. Right, where were we?
Finished up on the manor. Yeah, I mean, I did a couple more sessions. Around this time, my brother, Baz, call him Arkhead, he was starting to get back into fishing. We'd always fish from sort of day dot together. You know, everything we'd done was fishing together. Everything we did was together. But around that time, just before when I was started fishing down south, he had his first kid and that. So he sort of stepped back from fishing and he hadn't been to Oxford. But yeah, by this time, like his kid had got to sort of a year old and he was going to get back into fishing. So he came onto the manor with me and he was getting a few and I was picking them up and I was just ready to move on. I mean, I remember I lost Spike at the net a couple of weeks later when I was literally doing pictures for our kid with his new PB. He'd had a fish called, I think it was Sticky Rib or something like that. He'd had a new PB, and I lost it at the net because I wasn't on my right. Well, it was the only next swim down, but I remember I could hear it going. I was just doing a few pictures and said, I'll get it in a minute. Bad angling, really, and I lost it at the net, and I said, that's a carp god's repaying me because I didn't get it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I ended up moving on to Lynch Hill. After that, I did loads of rumours. I mean, I knew lads that have fished there over the years and what resided in there. And yeah, I mean, even my dad had fished there. I mean, that's probably worth saying. I mean, it was my dad who got us into fishing back in the day. Yeah. And yeah, he'd fished there years ago. And yeah, I thought I'd go and have a look at the place.
You mentioned Miles not so long back. What a winter he had on there this year.
Oh, mental, honestly. I think he caught more 40s in a couple of weeks than I've had in my life. Near as damn, anyway. Yeah, yeah. He just seems to fish are attracted to me. Well, he's if I could have someone to catch a fish to save my life, it'd definitely be him. He's just, I mean, I don't want to blow his trumpet too much because he'll love this, but
his trumpet, especially do it in your own private town.
No, it just seems every style of angle, and I'm quite good at sort of stalking and just doing your normal style of fishing, whereas he's got everything in his locker, like to a T, whether it be solid bag fishing, floater fishing, zig fishing, everything he's got, and he's got an approach for it all, and he just seems to be able to just flick from one to the other and know what the fish want and need, and that is what separates a really good angler from a normal angler. And he's got it, yeah, and that range thing as well. I mean, I've seen him hitting some stupid ranges, like 200 plus. He's got it all. But enough of blowing his trumpet, because I've got some, I could probably say just as much to knock him down a peg or two as well. So. The old northern ninja.
Right, so let's get back on your time at Christchurch. What sort of stock was in there when you started paying it a bit of attention?
Well, I remember when I went over there, it was, what time of year was this? This was sort of getting on for sort of April time it was. I went over and it was real, I remember going over and it was real quickie over there. But yeah, back to the lake anyway, I'll start with that. It was 8 acres. Stock-wise, this is Christchurch, 8 acres, and I'd say there's about 200 fish in there.
That's a good stock.
Yeah, these days, there's probably 20, 40-pound plus fish in there at the right time of year, in 8 acres, and I'd say 60 plus 30s, you know that. And they're all absolute stunners. I don't know if you've seen the Christchurch fish, but I'd say they're second to none, you know, with... you really spoil. I mean, there's one fish in there that I probably, I mean, I've had it before and I'd still do pictures of it. It's called the Lumpy Common, and that's about the only fish that sort of stands out from the rest. The rest of them are real oaky brown, scaly stunners. But yeah, I went over there, and I remember there was quite a bit of animosity when I first went over. It was I wouldn't say locally run. There was people from all over, but it was... Phil, it's hard to put it, but it's like there was only one way of fishing over there. Yeah, there was only a couple of people doing anything different, and everyone else was sort of bivvying up behind each other to get into the going swims, all the central swims, the big swims that fish the centre of the lake. They were the swims to be in, apparently. There was a rule on there, full tackle rule, so you couldn't just put a bucket behind someone and drop into another swim. You had to literally be behind them to get in there. So if someone wasn't going for, say, 2 days, you'd have to bivvy up behind them for 2 days to get in there. And that's the way it was working. But obviously, the lads who knew each other knew when each other were going, and they were lying about when they were going and things like that. It was just little things like that. And there was a 4-day rule. So if you were going to waste 2 days bivvying up just to get in a swim, it just seemed a waste. And I just went on there. There was a few. I mean, I got on with a few people straight away. Kev Hewitt. He's a real good lad. He was fishing on there, and he was doing his own thing. And Adam Smith. That's the first place I met him. He's a nice lad. He was just doing his own thing as well. But there was like a few that were a little quickie bunch. You know, they had like walkie talkies and that night talking to each other. You know, little did they know I could get a walkie-talkie as well and tune into the same channel and see what they were saying about me. But yeah, I went over there, and I mean, I soon started to know a few people, but I was just doing my own thing, and I noticed straight away there was loads of, I mean, I love corners. I love it in the corners, and like, especially because of tree climbing. You know, you can get up the trees and see the fish, and it was just brilliant, you know, getting in the edges a lot. And so many people were just fishing out in the middle, bivvying behind each other, it didn't seem people were fishing these little corners. So I just started fishing the corners. And I soon started getting on fish straight away. I remember one session, I'd gone down there and I didn't really know anyone. And the fish were moving in the night out of a lot from end to end because of the line pressure. They wouldn't pull up with it. And yeah, I'd gone down and they had a fish out of one corner. This was like getting on for first light, you know, the feeding time. And where they show in the morning usually is where you need to be. And they were showing in this little corner. I had one fish, chucked it in a retainer. Put it in a retainer. And moved down to the next swim down, had another fish there. And then went back to the same corner again, had another one there, and then went a bit further up the lake and had another one. And I went down to one of the lads and said, "Can you do us a picture?" And he's like, "Yeah, what you got?" Well, I was like, "I've got two in that corner. I've got one there and I've got one just here." And he's like, "What? What?" And from then on, really, because I started catching a few fish, people sort of wanted to sort of let me in, as to speak, me stripes. And yeah, I started getting on really well and getting in with the lads. And it's just worth saying, it's not like that anymore. You know, we'll come to that anyway. But yeah, that's how it was back then.
Yeah, I fished.
But yeah, go on.
Yeah, I fished the odd cleaky water in the past, and I've got to that point now. You're just like, yeah, crack on. You know, you do your thing. I'm just going to do mine. And when I'm catching fish, you're going to open up.
Yeah,
and that's pretty much always the way it happens.
Yeah, I don't see as much of it these days. I think because there's a lot more people in the sport. It seems to have been cut out a lot. There's still the odd place that's quite quicky, but apart from that, everyone just seems to... I mean, there seems to be more quickiness on social media these days.
Yeah. And,
that's where it all goes on. Yeah,
that certainly exists, unfortunately. But remember, Facebook isn't real life.
No, definitely not.
How long did you spend on Christchurch then? I
took the exact same approach over there. I was fishing, I started on the cell, with little bits of tiger, and was fishing off the spot again. And it always found that I was baiting, wherever I was fishing off the spot, the main spot that I would be baiting would be the gravel, and then just off the side of the spot would be silt. Obviously, where they're working the silt and they work it down to the gravel and they're kicking it off behind them through the gill rakers, and that's getting covered in silt. So I was using helicopters back then. By the time I'd moved on to Christchurch, I was using the helicopter rig, fishing it in the silt. Yeah. And I was picking them up and I was getting some of the real rare ones again. One of my first fish, well, I think it was about my third or fourth fish, was a fish called Slate Grey. That's a real nice, well, obviously slate grey cod fish.
Yeah, I've seen the pictures that long. It is a nice long, like you say, grey stunning fish.
Yeah. And this was what would this been? 2010. This was I'd gone over there and like I say, I was picking up some of the rarer ones. I had another fish called the Scar. That was another 41-2, and. Yeah, it was just going well, right? Honestly, it felt like I couldn't do anything wrong. People were always catching on there, you know, it was quite pressured, but there wasn't a lot of anglers on there, you just saw the same faces. And I did two full seasons, and I ended up having a lot of fish. I think I'd, of the 200, I think I'd like 90-odd different fish. And some of the better ones as well. So I thought it was time for me to pull off.
Yeah, and that's damn good going on the water like that. You
know, so yeah.
They do react to pressure and lead being thrown at them to catch, basically half a leg stock.
The only ones I avoided was the commons, the big commons. I couldn't get any of the big commons. I seemed to always get the mirrors. And I tell you a weird thing, which I've seen again since with, Adam, who I mentioned earlier, Adam Smith, he was on there at the time, and I always caught the fish that he didn't catch, and he always caught the ones that I didn't, and it happened again, exactly on Stone Acres when we moved over there together, he caught the opposite fish to me. Now, whether there's any coincidence with that, or whether it was just down to our different styles of angling or what, I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, literally any fish that I caught, he didn't catch, and maybe one or two, but that was it.
Oh, that is interesting. It's a phenomenon I have heard of before, and yeah, I've actually experienced it. There's a lake used fish not far from me. There's one They used to call it scaly, you know, again, a rare one, once or twice a year. And the one year it came out four times and I had all four captures.
Yeah.
Lovely looking fish, but at the end it was getting embarrassing because everyone else wanted to catch it.
I think that's red card and off.
Yeah, which is why I carried on. it wasn't the biggest in there, but certainly one that was sought after. But I think they'll think it logically. I put things down like that down to, you know, slight differences in the rigs we each use, because everyone's got our own preferences, and certain rigs pick up certain fish that feed certain ways.
Yeah, definitely. That's what we've always said. Yeah, go on.
And the other one is BO. You know, body odour. If, you know, as daft as it sounds, you know, you have the old stories about female pheromones attracting fish. And,
yeah,
you know, what if, you know, one of yours is, you know, secretes, you know, you're not even going to know, but, you know, you've got you're tainting your bait with, you know, a bodily smell or something that, you know, can't like or don't like.
Yeah, I've heard it a few times. It's been a bit debatable. I mean, I remember my dad saying the same thing years and years ago. I remember he was after certain fish and he gave up smoking at the time and ended up catching it, and he always put it down to the nicotine.
The big one that puts them off.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you should probably start putting nicotine in your ground bait.
The bream off. Yeah.
Put everything off. That's what my dad said. He said he when he actually caught the fish he was after, he'd quit smoking at the time, and he always put it down to that, his fingers going on his up bait. And yeah, whether it's true or not, it's definitely worth keeping an eye on.
Yeah, I'd definitely put smoke. I think Jamie's told a story on the podcast before about someone who's, you know, given up smoking and just started, his catch rate's gone up.
Yeah,
I'm asking
definitely
about that one, because I think it was a while ago. Worth covering along with you. Public service with helping the health of the nation. Give up smoking, catch more fish.
Yeah, there'll just be loads of vapor these days, isn't it?
Oh, you're not kidding.
What everyone smoked.
Yeah, I've seen my mate, like old Mark Hogg, do a slideshow not far from me. And there's about, I don't know, 50, 60 people in the room, and about three quarters were vaping. All you could hear was that little going off all.
Yeah, have you seen the size of some of them? I've seen one that was a grenade. I was like, what? I mean, surely it's probably easier to carry a pack of fags. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, going back onto Lynch Hill, if you like.
Yeah.
I done the two seasons over there. I'd had a real good hit. It was still fish that I wanted, and I always thought I probably would venture back there one day. But yeah, I went over onto Stoneacres. I thought I'd earn me sort of stripes, as to speak, on the Christchurch. It's worth mentioning there's another lake there called Willow as well. I used to do a lot on there when it was getting pressured on Christchurch, or there was too many on, or couldn't get where I needed to be. I'd drop on there, and yeah, there's a real good. There's some bangers in there as well. We go up to 40-odd pound, but yeah, and it was never somewhere I was going to focus my full attention. I always knew I was leading up to Stoneacres. That's where I was going to go. So I'd done that, and I went over to Stoneacres, and Miles was over there at the time. He was doing his thing, and at the time it was, they were a real high class of angler on there, you know, and it mainly down to the distance they could cast. You know, these lads were all in. I mean, I know there was Miles, Sean Gately, Ian Gerald. They were all big chuckers. John Kneebone and Adam as well. He'd came over at the same time as me. And they were all hitting like 180s, 170s plus. And this was something I didn't have in my locker. And I remember it being a little bit frightening. But because I got on with Miles, this was the thing as well. I always, like, since I got to know Miles, and he only lived around the corner from me, he was my means of transport. That's why I befriended him.
Again, but
yeah, you have to edit that bit out. No, but yeah, we become really good friends just through fishing, as I have with loads of different people. I mean, that's something I've always said about fishing. You know, me and you could walk into a pub now, just normally, and we probably won't talk to each other, but put us in fishing jumpers and we'll natter along all night. And it just brings loads of people together.
It does, definitely.
Yeah, but without going off subject too much. Yeah, I was on Stoneacres. That was me. I was done. It was springtime. Got on there early March. Miles was it doing his thing, and I was my approach was to see. I'd already done like little bits and bobs on there, not fishing wise, but climbing trees and seeing fish, and I was finding them in the edges all the time. I never fished from, but I did find them, and often I'd walk around with Miles when we got down. We'd always head down midnight, tunes banging, and we'd get there sort of 2-3 in the morning, because it's a 140-mile trip for us from up here. The boys down there were spoiled. But we'd get down early hours, and I'd often like walk around with him, do a couple of laps or what have you, and then I'd venture over to Christchurch, do my own thing. I was on Stoneacres, and I'd always seen them in the edges, and I just thought, you know, I don't need to be fishing that far out, and I couldn't. I literally couldn't cast that far anyway. I mean, I had probably 100 yards in my locker, and that was it. I got on there, and I got into it straight away. I was up the trees. I was literally just focusing on find the fish and catch them, the way I'd done it on Christchurch and St. John's, you know, and previous up north.
Yeah, so, before we go on, can we just get a bit of a background on Stoneacres? How big is the lake, and what sort of stock of cast have we got?
It's 48 acres in size. It's
a good chunk of water, then.
Yeah, all right, it's a good chunk of water. It's got an island in the middle, sort of two-thirds of the way down. And I'd say the stock is between 60 and 70, probably close to the end of 70 back then, and getting less and less over the years. This was 2012. Real good stock of big carp as well. You know, they had a choco back then. Whether it's still alive to this day, we don't know. But the choco, it was the Oxfordshire record, done 54 plus. Behind that, you had bite mark that was coming well up in the ranks, 48s, 49s. And then behind that, there was another sort of probably 8 or 10, 18 members that were all up and around the 40-pound mark. And they were all scaly stunners again. Every fish was an absolute stunner. Apart from that, you had a big head of bream, like I mentioned earlier, some of the big bream that I caught from there, and a massive head of tench, massive. So many, and a lot of birds as well, which are a pain.
So basically, everything's going to eat your bait.
Everything, literally, yeah. You had no problems with rotten bait anyway, that's for sure. It was all getting eaten by something or other.
So what was your first... bit of contact with the
Stoneacres
Kipper, with a fish?
Yeah, well, my first fish, it was quick, but I had to work for it, I'll tell you that now. Like I say, I was getting up the trees, and one of the things I noticed, it was, back then, the rule was, you could go out in the boat, it's worth saying, you could use a boat on the aquascope, you know, you could block up spots, up to where you were fishing, but you could only do it if you could cast that far, so you had to go out, find your spot, whether it be 100 yards or 180 yards, you'd have to find it, block it up and cast to it. And then you'd go out in your boat and see if the rig was fishing. And I see lads, Miles, he'd spend all day trying to get his spots, trying to hit his spots bang on, you know, get 3 or 4 rods on these spots.
Yeah.
So it's needless to say, it was a lot of casting and a lot of boat work. So the boats were a massive, massive factor on there. And I'd get up trees and I'd be, like, say, on the end bank, and people would be out in the boats, back and two, back and two. As soon as they went out in the boats for the first time in the morning or the afternoon after bite time, I'd see the fish come down the line of the centre into the edges and just sort of moor up and sort of getting in the edges. And I thought, well, this is a bit of me. You know, these fish, they're not into getting cast at and boated over, so they're getting in the edges at some point. So, yeah, I was focusing on a swim known as Calf Bay. It's the closest swim to the car park. Not, I mean, that did help, but not for any reason. And it was the shallowest part of the lake, sort of the lake average around 9-10 foot, and this came up to sort of 6 foot. And it was a real mild spring, 2012. So the sun was playing a massive part. And I found this fish. It kept coming in every day. Yeah, real good fish, and I didn't quite cock eyes on it properly, but it kept coming in under the surface, just glistening under the surface. Honestly, if you weren't up the tree, you wouldn't have known it was there, and it dropped in on this spot, it was probably half the size of a bucket lid, and it'd just have a little rip open and it'd mooch off. And after a couple of days of watching it, I was fishing elsewhere just in the edge where I'd seen a few other fish, but I kept seeing this fish doing this, and I didn't want to put it off, you know, as to speak. It was a natural area that it was working, and I've always found that natural areas where they're making themselves are the best areas, but you've got to get it right. So I sort of left it to it, and I said, when I got a good look at it, it was a common, and I thought, that's 40 puts, and for Stone Acres, that hadn't been, no 40-pound commons were still alive. There'd been a 40-pound common caught, like, many years before, but that had died. So I said to Miles, I said, there's a 40-pound common in here, and he said, listen, I've heard all the rumours, there's no 40-pound common, and I said, look, honestly, I've seen it. You know what I'm like, I see fish. He's like, true, but the only way to prove it is catch it. And I said, all right, then. And he was right. So, yeah, I kept watching this fish, but I left it to it, because I didn't know what like the wraps to the spot or anything. I couldn't fish it effectively, so I just sort of left it to it to the next week. And I got down the following week, and this spot had doubled in size, and I hadn't put any bait on it or anything. It was only short. I think it was 10 wraps, 11 feet it was, after I ended up like wrapping it up in that. But yeah, it doubled in size, and I thought, I've got to get the perfect wraps for this spot. It's a one-rod spot. And I noticed that the fish just kept working the back edge of the spot. It wouldn't touch the front. It was the back end it was touching. So I thought, I've got to have a rig perfectly on that spot at the back, otherwise it's not going to have it. So I did it. I got the boat out, which I hadn't used before, which isn't an easy thing to do.
Oh, it certainly isn't.
Yeah, and I literally all I had was a boat and a couple of oars. That was it. So it wasn't even mine. I just grabbed it out of the yard, and that was it. So I got the spot blocked up, got the perfect wraps for it, and I got the rig rocking on the back of the spot, just a single balanced tiger. I thought, that's it. I don't need to arouse its suspicion with a big pile of bait. It's eating there anyway. So anyway, I ended up having, although it was only a single tiger, the birds were a nightmare. The coots, because they'd seen me, obviously they knew people who were out in boats dropping, casting rigs, sorry, were obviously putting bait out. So the coots had seen me doing that, and they were being a pain on this single tiger. And I could clap all I wanted, do whatever, squawk as loud as I could. They weren't interested in being scared off it. So what I ended up doing was getting up the tree that I was seeing this coming from. It was about, say, 25 foot up. Yeah. And when the coots came over, I'd shake the branches and sort of startle them. And they were scared then. They'd fly off. So I ended up having to stay up there. I mean, there's still a little plank of wood up there where I'd moulded it into the tree and sort of got me stove up there and everything. I mean, it was only a quick climb down to the rod, and I was on it. So, but it's the only way I could get these fish, these birds to stay off the spot. So anyway, long story short, although it's still a long story, this common ended up mooching back in. It dropped down on the spot that day. I'd sat up there for about probably 5-6 hours. And I watched it shake its head, ditch the lead, and just zip off. So I flew down the tree, and I knew I was into a real good common. I got it in, no problem, didn't have to use the boat or anything. Got it in, and I looked down, and I thought, that's a 40-pound common. And I'd looked at every fish in that lake, and I thought, I've not seen that fish. Yeah. I remember seeing Miles, he was in a fish like directly opposite me, pretty much, in a big point. And I was shouting, and he couldn't hear me because I was buzzing. Obviously, first Stone Acres carp in the net. It was this common. So I've tried ringing him. I saw him pull his phone out of his pocket and then put it back in. Just totally blanked me.
I thought,
does he know I've got the fish and he don't want to talk to me or what? But anyway, I ended up getting hold of him, and he came round. And he was, I'd say he was more like in shock than me, you know, like he was buzzing, he looked in the net, he went, oh my God, I've never seen that fish before, that's a 40-pound common. So obviously we were all buzzing, we got it on the scales, and it wasn't quite 40, it was 38.7 pounds, but this fish was immaculate, its mouth was pristine, and Miles was like, I don't know it, I don't know anyone that knows it, no one's caught that fish, and we ended up tracing it back 5 years it hadn't been out for. Rob Gillespie was the previous capture of it, like 31s, and that ended up going on, like they now call it Scottish Common after me. So yeah, that was my first capture.
Yeah, I absolutely love stories like that, you know, especially, you know, tricky fish.
Yeah,
you know, that's that's good angling, and yeah, that feeling as well, just to see something like that in the net, like, wow, who are you?
Definitely, there was a lot of effort. I mean, thinking back now, at the time, I didn't even think about it. You know, you just say you're doing your thing, and it's whatever means necessary. You just you got to do it. And but thinking back, yeah, there was a lot of effort. I remember the days I was having real good sleeps in the night and just charging myself up for the day, which is something I still do now.
Yeah, wait, depending on
you know, you bet you don't set any alarm clocks anymore, do you?
Well, I do. I just sleep through them.
Yeah, the rods wake you up these days, don't they?
Occasionally.
But that was me. I was into my first Stony Cart. I think that was my fifth night I'd done the previous week, like I said, and then that was my first day back. And I was buzzing. Believe it or not, my next fish was the next week, was the number 9 bus. And I don't know if you know the number 9 bus.
Oh, I know that well. That is like the great big plated linear thing that looks like it's been stretched.
Yeah, literally like a bus. But that was my next one. £38.10 that was. On another single again, just cast a chod into the weed. It's probably worth mentioning about this. It's not as big as a story, so I won't waffle on too much. but it was just a swim up from Calf Bay where I was. There was another good climbing tree there, and I'd seen a few fish just dropping down onto the fresh weed that was growing, and they were just picking off snails. I could see what they were up to, and I thought, and I'd seen one of them was the boss, and then let them mooch off, got down the tree, just cast a single rod. On a choddy. It was like a swirly pop-up, two different colours, like a pink and white, but it looked quite like a snail, if you know what I mean, because it was two different colours. I just left it, and I got back up the tree watching it, and I saw the bus come in, drop down on it, and twitch off and shoot off. Like, I thought, got no chance now, it's caught that. But I left it out anyway, because I thought another fish might come back in. And, night time came and nothing had happened, just this one rod out, and about 2 a.m. it's just gone off with a few beeps, and I just pulled up tight, and I thought it was a tench. I remember Dan was down, Dan Wildboy, he was doing a bit of a feature with me, and he said, "Do you need the waders?" I said, "Nah, mate, it's just a tench," and I got it in the edge, and I started feeling this big weight, and I could see a load of weed. And it's just started flapping around in this weed. And I said, "You better give me the waders." And before I could do that, I saw this big long fish. And I just grabbed the net, ran out in my pants, like no waders on, and just netted it. And walked down, it was just covered in weed. And there was a big snake hanging out the back of it. And that was it, the bus. I thought, no way. So I've had two of the rarest fish in there. Well, one that would not even known was in there. And then the bus, which is pretty rare, one after another. And that got a few chins wagging, believe me.
Yeah, it's the best way to get chins wagging, doing stuff like that. That's kind of answered my next question about that number 9 bus. I was going to ask how it fights, because it looks like it should shoot off like a bloody rocket.
Well, yeah, that, I mean, I was always led to believe that, and I've known that since it has. I think I was quite lucky with that, and mainly I think that was down because I caught it out of the weed. And not many people do. It's worth saying the number 9 bus, I don't know if you've seen its mouth, it's real swung over.
Yeah.
And the bottom lip is literally like a little stump, and that's down to it being a gravel feeder. I've learnt that from the years, the next couple of years going on from that, that it feeds on the gravel. Every time I've seen it, like, come in, it goes straight in the edge, straight onto the blade and gravel, chewing up the big stones, like, and spitting them out. And it definitely... Yeah, every time I've known it to get caught, like after that, was on the gravel, on the blatant gravel. Like back then, when it was casting, everyone fished the blatant spots, you know, because they could go out and view the rigs.
Yeah.
But obviously, and then it went to drop in the next couple of years, which we'll come to, and it doesn't come out as much anymore. And I think that's down to people not fishing the gravel anymore, because they don't have to drop the rigs, they're putting it into the silt and the little sneaky holes, and that fish doesn't come out much at all anymore.
Oh,
another little debate, maybe.
Yeah, I think, you know, individual fish, the 100% have different personalities and preferences. Well, preferences more than personalities and habits. And like you say, you know, number 9 bus, get a big blatant gravel patch with a little tiger, and along it comes.
Yeah. Yeah, or a krill wafter, you know, not trying to plug anything, but yeah. just whatever, anything on the gravel. I mean, a few people said to me, I mean, how would you catch the boss? And I just said, I mean, I had it out of the weed, but if you want to catch it, fish on the gravel, because that's the only other place I've seen it eat, apart from that one time when it was picking them snails off. But yeah, that was my first two out the way anyway.
Yeah, not a bad first two fish to nail.
Yeah, well, the next two fish weren't as good. I had probably the hardest brace of fish to ever catch within an hour, which was a 14 pounder and a simo. I mean, that was just as rare as catching bite mark and chuckle at the time.
Yeah, you can't beat a simo.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an original. It came back in the floods in Oxford. I think it came out of one of the rivers, and it got chucked in there. Well, one of the sort of brooks that runs through, and it got chucked in there. But it's not a bad looking simo, to be fair. Yeah. It's the darkest one I've ever seen, anyway.
Nah, a lot of it's down to the water quality that they get dropped in.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
A lot of the time, but,
definitely.
So you've got these two kippers from Stoney's. What's next? You know, do you just carry on doing what you're doing and catching, or?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously my target was charcoal and bite mark. At the time, I didn't feel like I was any of them fish would deserve. You know, I thought I'd already tread on a few toes and earned my stripes. You know, at the time, it's sort of, you have to sort of break yourself in, don't you? No one likes someone who goes on and catches the big one straight away.
I'll just say on that point,
go on.
Who cares?
That's true.
Earning your stripes with the clique, you know.
Yeah.
You've all paid the same for your ticket. You know, get on there and do it.
Definitely. When your number's up, your number's up. I mean, I've known people to catch it on Stone Air because I've been there, like our kid. My brother, he ended up catching it on his second fish. And that's it. When your number's up, your number's up. And it was always this thing of, when you've had the big one, it was always like red card and you're off. Or if you had one of them, it'd be yellow card. And if you had the big one, you're ready to go, mate. We'll take your pegs out for you. That's how it was. It was only a bit of banter. I mean, I've known lads to stay on there after they've caught it, because there is a lot of really nice fish to go for in there.
Yeah, there is.
But the following, I ended up just doing the spring. I did 21 nights in the spring for four fish, and I pulled off. I had a lot of other things going on in my life, sort of personal things, and I pulled off that year. But I got things sorted, and the next year it turned to day ticket. Not the full complex, just Lynchill and Willow. And Stoneacres became a 35-man syndicate, and... just 35-man syndicate, and they allowed the rule of dropping your rigs, so you could go out in the boat and drop your rigs. This was something we'd always sort of thought about, but obviously we'd never done it. You know, we always thought it would be good because of the safety of the fish. I mean, a lot of people were casting these long ranges, but you know yourself, you know it can be a case of cracking off sometimes. If something didn't go right, you could crack off, and a lot of fish were like trailing rigs and trailing out of line. So it worked well for the safety of the fish to be able to drop the rigs. Yeah. Not some people's cup of tea, but that was the rules. But unfortunately, I didn't make the cut for the 35 men.
All right, so it's just from fishing, you know, just onto the waiting list then.
Yeah, well, that was it. I mean, same Miles as well. He didn't make the cut, and we weren't happy about it. But that was life, you know. You couldn't say anything about it, because if you did, you'd end up not getting a ticket back yourself.
Yeah.
So we just sort of sat there, and what we ended up doing, well, we're not Miles, but myself and my brother wanted to get on at the time as well, with the other two weights just turning day ticket. Dewey, the owner, asked us if we wanted to go over there and catch as many fish as we could and get some publicity going for there. And so that's what we did. Obviously, I had a good idea of how to catch them out of there, and I was working by this time with Sticky, and they were coming up through the ranks and doing a lot of publicising, so what a perfect place to do it. So we went over there for, like, that was 2013. Went over there and had some good fun over there. I think we both ended up having 30-odd fish. Just within a few months as well, just after spawning, we went on, and yeah, we smashed it, a new one, really.
man. It's always nice also when you know, in that position where you've got sponsors, it's you know, even though you know, you say, oh, I'm not going to put you under any pressure, you do feel it a bit, don't you?
You can do an
album.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the thing. That's the way I've always been. Like along this time, it's probably worth saying, I did start picking up a couple of sponsors, but there was never any pressure with it. And I spoke to lads who had felt pressures from other companies, and some companies had done it as well that I was with, but it was all sort of in the past, you know, that I think they'd sort of learned by it not to do it, and the fish had come. The thing is, at the end of the day, if anything were to come in my way of my fishing, I'd just sort of drop it, you know. But these days, there never seems to be any pressures from any companies. I'm quite happy with that. But I know what you mean. There's an underlying pressure that sort of sits on you, and if you're not catching, it's like
almost you put on yourself.
Yeah, definitely. It's all in your own mind.
Right. So. Yeah, I'm itching to get to Bite Mark, but I'm sure we've got a few other things in between.
Yeah, I mean, I went back on there 2014. I won't touch too much on that. At 2014, I was getting used to the boat more than anything, dropping the rigs, etc. I was doing sort of a mixed bunch. I was doing a lot of my stalking still, like in the edges, trying to avoid the boat as much as I could because I knew how scarce they were of it. But sometimes you just had to get in that boat and drop the rigs. There was other lads doing real damage on there through the dropping, because obviously these fish they'd only get caught on real buoyant areas and that. So as soon as people were dropping rigs into these little holes, they were thinking it was free food, and all of a sudden the fish started becoming really riggy, like really, really riggy. You know, I noticed, like, just from the couple of years from when I first started to the next year that I came on in 2014, the fish had changed totally. Their behaviours were a lot more wary, and I think this was down to them feeding happily in these little tiny areas, and then all of a sudden they've got a hook in the lip, and what's going on here? How's he done that?
Yeah. Some learned by association. Once something trips them up once or twice, then a lot of fish don't do it again. Some fish are just, I think like humans, you get intelligent fish and then you get thick bastards. You want to get caught again and again and again. And I like those fish.
Yeah, we won't go into that. everyone loves a muggy common.
Yeah, give me a big fat muggy mirror. If it's a simo, even better.
They started getting really riggy, and I was struggling in the edges casting without the boat. Not so much struggling, but I was seeing myself get like add off big time. I thought these aren't catchable like this anymore, unless it was a case of lowering the rig in and being able to place it, you know, literally in 2-3 foot of water, and I could stash everything away, you know, put my lead in the silt and work my line way back through the weed. Yeah, so it was. It was just a case of that, so I got used to the boat, and they're still having fish. I think I had 7 or 8 through 2014. None of the real big ones, just up to sort of mid-30s.
Mid-30s, still a bloody big fish.
Definitely. And they're all stunners. Like I say, none of the real big ones, you know, 18-wise. But yeah, I was still getting numbers under my belt, and then I hadn't repeated on one either, you know, which was quite a big thing on there, you know, people repeating. I hadn't repeated on one. I think I'd had sort of 12 fish by then, and I hadn't repeated on one. So I only fished up to September, and then 2015, which was last year, didn't get back on till the May. Mm. Yeah, it was like mid-May when I got back on. I had other things going on with work, etc. I work a lot through the winter as much as I can. Like I say, on the railway, there's less trains running in the winter, so we have more work, and then I'll sort of save up and save all my leave for the spring/summer and autumn. So yeah, I got on sort of May. Yeah, I got on May, and I just got straight onto fish pretty much. That was it, because it was sort of second nature by then, the dropping and things. And I mean, the first one that I caught, I mean, this is bit of a different sort of capture, it's probably worth mentioning. I turned up and I saw some fish sort of ripping up the marginal shelf, and I thought, right, I'll do what I normally would, prep a rod up and get it ready to go. As soon as they mooch off, I'll get a rig in. It was only sort of 20 yards, something like that, and I got the rod ready, got back up the tree, and it was still there, obviously feeding on some naturals or what have you, and I just thought, these are just going to rip it up and go and not come back if I don't do something about it. And what happened is I saw some ducks like coming nearby, and I thought, yeah, this usually sometimes I can introduce a couple of chops, you know, just to startle the fish, yeah, and hopefully they'll come back. But yeah, I saw these ducks, and I thought, right, what I ended up doing is getting some mixers, got up the tree with a catapult, and catapulted these mixers straight over the top of these fish. And the ducks came over, sort of startled the fish, and the they sort of mooched off. As soon as they did that, I flew down the tree, had the rod ready, and casted the rod straight at the ducks, because obviously I knew that's where the spot was.
Yeah,
I went down with a bit of a thump, put the rod down, got up the tree, and the fish just came back in, and the first one that came over it picked it up, and it was away.
Great stuff.
Yeah, a little bit of a crafty one for some people there, if they want to take that on board.
I'll using the ducks and other wildlife to our advantage, because we can do it with bird life so much. We can give away the carp quite often as well.
Definitely.
Is it a big fish, a good one?
No, it was, a 28-pound...
Yeah.
I think it was 28 an ounces, a little paintbrush sail. Not a repeat again, it's another new fish to me.
Yeah.
I was off the mark straight away. I mean, I remember it was only within like an hour of turning up. Obviously, I'd not been down. I remember Adam being in the next swim, and I shouted at him like, "Oi, oi, get the net," right? And he's looked down, and he's like, "Oh, for fuck's sake, he's back, is he?" he's back, as I was grinning. It's worth mentioning as well that I'd... my new plan was to do a lot more boating this year, like baiting, swims, and getting some going and boating. So I dropped down to some like 9-foot rods that I'd bought. I won't mention what they were, but because they ended up going in the bin. But yeah, I bought some 9-foot. No, they ended up costing me a couple of fish, which we'll probably come to in a minute, but definitely. I dropped down to these 9-foot rods, and I remember being there, like, the rod was bent double, and Adam's like, "Oh, here he is, he's back here." But yeah, I started picking up fish straight away, all the time, again. The next session down, I was picking up, and I picked up another fish, and it was just going like clockwork again. By this time, I'd sort of come to the thought that Choco had passed by then. It hadn't been out since 2012, and it was twice a year fish, usually on moons, big bait fish, and it just wasn't coming out. And so the king of the pond then was Bite Mart. That was my target. No one had seen Choco or anything, and it usually always gets seen, showing out there and in the edges, but yeah, it just wasn't getting seen. So the next target was Bite Mart. I ended up baiting a swim known as the Bins. It was a real, real rarely fished swim, so I thought this is a good place to get something going. And got in there, and the thing was with that, it was the deepest part of the lake, and it always seemed to do just morning bites. Like as a rule, it would just do morning bites, and then sort of 9-10 o'clock would go by, and that'd be it. Like, you wouldn't get a bite. So it worked well with my fishing, because I liked the stalking, so I could get the rods out in the evening, fish it through the night, get some morning bites, and if the sun came out and the conditions are right, I could happily wind in and mooch off, do some stalking or what have you. So yeah, I was doing a bit of baiting in there, and I was just baiting it before I went. That's what I was doing. I was baiting it before I went home, and then coming back on the Monday, and just fishing singles over the top of it. I think I baited it for about 3 weeks before I did that, and then I come back and just fish singles in the hope that like fish had come back looking for that bait and pick up my singles straight away. And I think my first session doing that, got down sort of Sunday evening late, enough time just to get the rods out, put 3 singles out the next morning, had a ripping take out in the boat. As soon as I got over the top of the fish, hand lined it up. What was it? Bite mark coming through the surface, through the layers. Weed around its head, thought, here we go, this is it. Scale side up, 100%, and it was looking massive.
Yeah.
This is this was like June time, you know, just before spawning, it was pumped up. And I've gone for the net, and as I went for the net, I thought, I'm going to get this out, hand lining here. And as I went for the net, the weed came off its head, and away it went. I was like, here we go. Right, got into a good battle with it, 10, 15 minutes going on, ripping runs, and ripping runs. I've got all this on GoPro as well, it's probably worth mentioning, which isn't a good thing. And like I say, these rods were not doing me any justice. I was trying to catch up with the fish. There was a wind blowing, and the fish was running upwind, and I was blowing downwind, and I was putting pressure on these rods.
That's not good in a boat.
Oh, no, no. You know yourself. I mean, and the tip was literally touching my elbow, arched right over. I was trying to get to it, and it just wasn't happening. So what was having to do was put the rod down. I only had one oar. I'd be putting the rod down and oar into, like, get some slack in the line and wind down to it, and then kept doing that and get it out of another wee bed and another wee bed. There was a lot going on. And I remember there was a bit of a group gathered in me swimming that, because we'd seen, like, good fish showing over me. And, yeah, it was all looking good for it. And it was, I remember even on the last couple of runs it went on, it was coming up in the water, you know, sort of running out of energy, sort of curving around. I thought, yeah, I've got you. Keep coming. And I remember it just went on this mad run, and next minute, poof, nearly came out the boat, they up-pulled. Absolutely gutted, mate, honestly. And there was a few words said loudly out of the boat, and everyone soon disappeared out of my swim. I think I remember I didn't even row back to the side. I just let the wind blow me down, mate. I just sort of gave up all hope.
Yeah, man, that's terrible after seeing that scale side. Yeah. But it is something we can all relate to, and you did bounce back. You know, you've been last week's Carp Talk cover star, pin-up
boy. Yeah, I did. Yeah, I got it through the door this week. There's a pretty good looking lad on the front. I'll agree with that. Yeah, I got it in the end, mate. That was it. What can I say about that, mate? It was all leading up to it. Honestly, if I'm honest about it, mate, it still hasn't set in now, and that was about 2 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago. So everything's been a bit mental since then. It was almost like it was fate. I don't know if you heard some of the stories sort of leading up to it.
I've seen a video of you doing a carp dance. Come on, you've got to tell us all about this. I've that video, and I think we're going to have to post it on our Carpcast page for people to relate to. It's the best carp dance I've ever seen. On that?
I'd probably say there's a few things. I'll come to that in a second. Yeah. Like, there was almost a prediction. What it was is, like I say, my brother had already caught it. And you know, you get like them time hop things on Facebook.
Yeah.
Where like it, and he reposted his capture of bite mark saying 2 years ago today.
Yeah.
And then I made a comment on there. Don't quote me on the words, but it was along these lines. Like, I'll never forget that moment. I won't be far behind you this week, this year. I could. I think I'll have it on Tuesday.
Yeah.
And believe it or not, I had it on the Tuesday.
you can buy me a lottery ticket.
Yeah, I mean, I should have put the lottery on, to be fair. There was a few things, honestly, people I was speaking to. I was pretty sure I'd seen it bounce on me, and I was saying to the lads down there, what that right-hand rod's going to do, mate, honestly. And almost talked on to the mat, and like you say about the carp dance. Nick came down there, the bailiff. He brought me some gas down, and I was really pumped up. You know, I was just feeling it. I'd already had two fish already. I had two rods remaining out, and Nick pulled up in the swim and I said, "Mate, get this video camera. It's gonna happen. This right hand rod, he's gonna do it." And he's like, "Go on, do the dance, mate," because I've been known for doing a little bit of dancing and that, a bit like Derek the Don with his tunes pumping. I was always one for doing a little bit of a dance, and yeah, I ended up. I've still got it on my phone now. It was shot at 19:18, like nearly 7:20 at night. And I do a little bit of a worm, and then come up out of that, and do a bit of a moonwalk and that. And literally, he passed me back the phone, and I had a little twitchy take, and I was like, "Oh, it's a tench." And the next minute, it just went into meltdown. So I've picked up the rod, and I said to Nick, I said, grab that camera there, like the 60D. I said, grab that, get this on video, mate. It was ready to go. And I've got the whole thing from start to finish going in and there and celebrating the lot on video. But yeah, even better, I've got the carp dance. Can't believe you.
I'm going to bring that up. That is impressive. I might try it myself next time I'm out. I'll scare everything in the margins.
Yeah. Oh, God. We'll have everyone dancing down there now.
Yeah, not as good as you, though, mate.
No, it's a pretty good move, I'll give you that.
So what, just for the record, what did Back Mark weigh?
£45.12. It's a new PB for me as well.
Oh, great stuff. So,
all them years after that big pointed, that was me previous, 44.10. Yeah. So all the years between, I still failed to beat it. But yeah, 45.12, it was down, well, say down in weight, we don't really know what the score was at. The story is with that, I did hear you mention it last week with Dave Moore, like that you didn't know if it, like, things were down in weight, up in weight.
Yeah, it's been a strange one this year with the winter. You'd have thought, you know, they'd have carried on feeding and all be showing some mega weights, but it's not really turned out. You know, not just with the odd fish, like, you know, like Bite Mark, it's, you know, Parrot's just been out down at, well, I say down, less massive.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and a few others, but still, let's just be honest, you know, we'll give them a weight, but it's not the weight that's the, you know, it's the memories of the videos.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, are these videos up on YouTube so all our listeners can go and check them out?
They're not as yet, but I'm pretty sure you're probably going to upload that one. But, I have got it all on the laptop. A few people have got I've sent it off to Dan, like the landing it and things, and they're editing up a bit of a video that's going to be either on the sticky site or go to Corder. I'm not too sure, but I'm sure it'll be out there. I don't know if the carp dance will feature. I don't know. I should make people pay to watch that one, really.
Yeah, paper dance.
Yeah, I'll start doing lessons, you know, tutorials, not fishing tutorials, just dancing ones. Yeah.
In fact, will you be at the next Northern Angling Show? Northern Angling
Show. I will be, yes, I was.
Right, I was there. I'm going to book you now on behalf of Jamie for the on-stage carp dance.
Oh, definitely, you can get me on, I'll do it in a mankini if you want me to.
No, it's a family-orientated show, mate, we can't get away with that.
Yeah, true. But yeah, I'll be there, mate, definitely. Where I'll be, I don't know, but you'll probably find me moonwalking about somewhere.
Yeah, brilliant. So I think that's a great place to end. We've got nearly an hour and a half here. And, you know, Scott Lloyd, thanks for talking to us on the Carpcast.
Yeah, no worries, mate. Thanks very much.
Big thank you to Scott. He's certainly smashed it on Stoneys the last few years. Clearly a very good angler, and yeah, I love the fact that you know, he's down there with his camera, videoing stuff, watching stuff. I followed him on Facebook across his Stone Acres journey for the last couple of years. So yeah, we wish him all the best on his new lake.
Yeah, do you know he's psychic as well?
No.
Oh, no. Not only did he do that carp dance video that you know, should go to our Carpcast you know, fan group, and the video's up there, I've posted it up, and literally he's handed you know, the mate's handed his camera back, he's just filmed it, then his rod has ripped off with Bite Mark, so the carp dances do work. But he also texts me a screenshot. He's told a mate on Christchurch he's going to have the perch comed. And he does.
He did, yes. I remember seeing that. He printed the text up, didn't he, on Facebook about him telling his pal he was going to have it. I think the perch common had nutted in that peg not long before, I think. When
not
the previous
still. How many times have you seen a fish nut and not caught it?
Yeah. I've also had it the other way, where I've seen that exact fish nut in a peg and it got caught from that peg, you know, the next capture. Including... I posted it up on my Facebook actually the other day. It was my capture of Mr. Angry from the Manchester Park Lake, which was actually 5 years ago on Wednesday, just gone.
So
I was going to do it as a throwback throwback Thursday. it was
you
actually.
Couldn't wait, could you?
Well, it was,
you had to get it up.
It would have been 5 years in one day instead of 5 years to the day. But anyway, yeah. But that had actually that fish showed on the spot just before I caught it. Just saw it slip its head up, and I'd just moved into the peg. I'd been chasing them about that week, and I'd seen that fish a couple of times, and then I'd moved into the monument peg, as it's called, and I saw a fish, a smallish one, like 30, 40 yards out. I was like, that'll do for me first rod. It's quite weedy, that lake, so put a light lead on, and it hit the deck, like bumped down all right. I was like, oh, that'll do for a spot. Put me normal stick on it that I use, and there's one spot. So I did put that rod out. It went bump on the spot with a light lead. I was like, oh, I'm leaving that. You know, it was one of them really good ones. And then I was just getting me next rod set up, having their lead around to the right, just to find a different spot. And I saw Angry just slide up and slide down. It was extremely distinguishable. I mean, there's nothing else, close to that weight, 10 pound bigger than anything else in the lake. And it's the colour of it as well. It looks quite browny when it nuts out. I was just like, well, I didn't even register it, you know what I mean? I wasn't like, God, there's my chance. Like, for the fish that I'd probably done 60, 70, 80 nights, trying to catch, and comes out very rarely. I was just like, oh, well, I've done what I can do. You know, my rod's out. I've seen a fish show, put a rod there, seen what I think's the one show. And I hadn't even got my third rod out, and it was away. I think I'd only got two rods out. And it's all on the video. You can see it on my Facebook page or on YouTube. If you search Mr. Angry, you will find it.
Is it on that video where you get thrown in?
Yep. Yes, on that one as well. Moving on, have we got any listeners' questions this week?
Ask us a question.
Yeah, we just got one this week, but I've put it in. It's a bit of a generic question, but it's always a fun one. And it's from Colin Barker. He says, if you could fish with any angler, past or present, who would it be and which lake would you take them to?
I don't know, really.
I've been thinking about it this morning, and I've not come up with an answer myself yet.
No, I mean...
There's so many.
There's so many. I mean, it would have always been Rod Hutchinson, in his heyday, in his sort of Carp Strikes Back days. I mean, there would have been no other person that I wanted to go fishing with. And where would you go? I mean, wow. Would you want to just catch fish, or would you want to go somewhere special where you're probably not going to catch? But
now about, going fishing with Chris Yates. Opening day, is it 1981 at Redmire?
Yeah, that's where I was thinking.
Being there with a camera to watch him catch his 50. I think it was 1981.
Yeah, Rod Hutchinson Save is mine. That Save buzz that was down there, the Looney Rotor and all that. I think we need to get somebody on, from back in the day on Save. I'd like to hear a guest talking about the crazy times on there. I met a chap recently. Dougie Diamond, they call him. I think he used to be a diamond, not maker. I wish I could make diamonds, but you know what I mean. In fact, I've not mentioned this to Kevin yet. I keep forgetting to say something to him. But this Dougie, I think he made a necklace. Like, it might even been a carp necklace for Kevin's first wife. Many years ago, and I remember he asked me to remember him to Kevin. I keep forgetting. It's just coming to my head now, and I know Kevin listens to this, so Dougie Diamond's keen to get back in touch with you, Kev. But I met two people on the lake that week. One was Dougie, who fished all week. There was another chap who was on the other rotor. What was the other rotor on there? Save called, there was a Looney Rotor, and there was the other one, which I forget the name. Anyway, he was
I can't remember, he
was telling me all the stories, he gave me a couple of names of people to get on that may very well come on and talk to us, because I think those Save, the early days on Save, there's a hell of a lot of stories and hell of a lot of great fish that came from there. And like I say, a significant part of Hutch's book was about it. There was a book called Save as well, wasn't there?
Yes, definitely. And innovations like the old I think the baiting pyramid was first done on there. Do you remember reading about that years back?
It was
Wilson.
That's right. I mean, it was a key lake in carp fishing history, for sure. I mean, that whole road was obviously you've got Harefield down there as well, Conn's is in the area, the fisheries.
Oh, you can't say those, you'll get shot.
The what's the other one? The Corder Lakes there, not owned by Corder, but there is a lake called Corder, which is the BCSG lake.
The BCSG, yeah.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, there's one down there called Pit 4 as well, I believe. It was in Dave Lane's book.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, it's and then obviously extremely near you had Colnmere that had the famous Black Mirror. Not too far away from there as well. I mean, it's steeped in history, that area of the country. Yeah, so
it's Farlow's there as well.
Farlow's is a little bit further. It's a bit more it's not far away. I used to drive past them all when I was going to Farlow's and Rodney Meadows, which are on the Boyer Leisure ticket there, kind of a bit more near Heathrow, going up that way.
But when you get to, you mentioned Heathrow, then you get more history with Horton and Kingsmead and Raisbury.
Yeah, of course, it's
spoiled. We need to bring some lakes back up Yorkshire.
Yep, Harrow's not too far as well from there. I mean, what an area of the country is. I used to live in Watford for a good few years, Luton and Watford, which was not far at all from around there. And then I just moved as far away as you can possibly get from all them lakes up north. But yeah, so then, to answer Colin Barker's question, that'd be mine. Rod Hutchinson on Savvy in the 80s, I think.
I think mine would be... I think it would be Chris Yates, and I'd dress like him as well. I'd go out and get a cane rod, and they wouldn't have to be cart. We could sit on a log and have a gudgeon match.
Cool. Moving on. I know an on the net that we haven't actually done, Mark, and it involves you. I noticed this week there were two press releases. One indicating you've joined JRC. Have you an ambassador, consultant, or?
Something like that. I think it's pro team member.
Pro team.
Yeah, he's basically promoting the gear. So, there might be one or two true reviews coming, but I can say to the listeners, we will keep our ethos of there being a true review. I will maintain integrity and not plug anything that's crap.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to getting involved as well. I've obviously done all the... sponsored thing before, and it's been out of it for nearly 2 years, and I did enjoy writing for the magazines and what have you, and there should be some video work coming up, and just watch this space, because we had a look around the showroom, everything set up, and it's, I tell you what, there's some cracking gear. I mean, anyway, I'm not going to go out the gear too much because I've not used it yet.
And what about the bait as well? You've gone with LA Carp, is it, or something?
I have, yeah, LA Carp, which is stands for Lone Angler. And I'm sure you must know who John Baker is.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, his first bait company was Bait 78. I was still getting my backside wiped when he was selling bait. So, you put him up there with the likes of, Bill Cotton, Gary Bays. He's very experienced, and... that way, when I saw his name involved, because I got a text from actually Terry Edmonds asking me if I was tied to any bait company at the minute, which I haven't been for quite a while. Before I even answered, I went to his Facebook, had a look who he was with, and did a bit of due diligence. And then, so I see the name John Baker, and also another fella, John Llewellyn, who sells a lot of bait across Europe with his own company, Big Carp. And it's their names you can put your confidence in. And I've been using this bait, and when I've been in a couple of situations where I'm expecting to catch, I have caught. That's good enough for me. It takes the doubt out. I like a bait with confidence in, and this is KS15, which is krill and shrimp. It's not the most pleasant smell in a bait, but the fish like it, and so do I. Plug over. Your turn.
That's usually a good sign of bait if it stings horrible. In my experience, they're generally decent baits. I'm still waiting to get hold of some of the Baitworks baits. Mark Bryant, who we had on a little while ago.
Oh, was it Hellraisers?
Sent from Hell, yeah. Sent from Heaven and Sent from Hell, yeah. I still haven't put an order in yet. I need to get on the website and order myself some. Everybody raves about them, and Mark clearly knows what he's talking about. So yeah, I keep forgetting, but I just want them because I want some pop-ups called Sent From Hell. I think it's a great name. But yeah, that was always the sign of a good bait if they stink horrible. I actually received some stuff in the post this week too.
Sorry, I've just done a close encounter with a wasp. It's recording outside, but it doesn't have its hazards.
Yeah, I thought there was a lot of noise coming from your ends, a few clicks and...
Yeah, it was me
stuff.
Fighting fresh air.
I got two little boxes off Nash over the last couple of weeks. One being a very welcome return of their PVA. They've had a few years without any decent PVA. I used to love the webcasts and stuff that they did. But I never liked the old green solid bags and stuff that they did. I mean, they were good. We used to use them on Fendrator many years ago for the boat fishing, because we used to call them death bags, because they were, you could get like a kilo of bait in them, but they took ages to melt, which were great for this kind of boat fishing we're doing, because you could really flatten down some weed. So, you know, if you got like a Fendrator had heavy weed, you'd never cast into it, but you could see on the boat when you were going across, you could make a big death bag that was like, I don't know, maybe like 8 inches by 4 inches or something. They were pretty big, and you could just flatten down. You'd look from the boat, see a big flat area of weed, and these bags were great for dropping on it, but they weren't great for anything else.
You're not going to cast them that big, are you?
No. You could underarm them out just about. And it was the fact they were pretty thick. They weren't great in my experience. But I loved the webcast. As you know, stocking PVA, isn't it? Like I always used to note the different companies, because certain companies were better at certain times of the year depending on the water temperature.
I've always liked ESP stocking PVA, but we have got the new Nash stuff in the shop. I was printing it out the other day, and you know, I've not used it yet, but I will be using it. And you know what I do like as well in that range is PVA tape.
Yeah, well...
That is my string of material of choice.
Yeah, I got some of the tape. There was like three different sizes of funnel web, which, I mean, as you know, I've said this for ages, I never cast out without some sort of stick or bag on. And I don't use solid bags unless, you know, I'm fishing in heavy weed or on something that it needs to sit across. But there's loads of different sizes of bag. There's different sizes of webcast, which... You know, I'll use the thickest one I can cast. So if I'm, you know, fishing, you know, 60 yards or less, I'll use the thickest possible one. If I'm fishing, you know, need to get a bit further, I'll use a medium sized one, and then I'll use the thinnest one if I'm going sort of 80 yards plus. I don't think they do a really thin one. You know, the long range web that Corda do. Like I can cast like 90, 95 yards with that pretty comfortably, you know, if there's not too much wind, because they're about the diameter of like a 14, 15 mil boilie. So if you just make one that's pretty short, you know, basically 30 mil long, so it's like two boilies, pull it, you know, thread it onto your hook link, pull your hook into it, you can, it's no thicker than the actual hook bait that you've already got on. So it doesn't really restrict your cast. I'd like to see Nash do one that thin. I don't think they have done yet. I think there's only Corda that do the long range one. But yeah, I've said about it for ages. My preferred rig being a blowback rig with a snowman and a stick threaded on. I just think the presentation's almost perfect. You can land it anywhere, barring super thick weed. So yeah, I was really pleased to see that Nash have got a PVA range out again. Looks decent. And also, we've had loads of bobbin chat recently. I got the new range of slap heads and stuff. And I'm going to contradict everything I've said.
That
was
so
last...
well.
I'm going to contradict myself.
Well, are they named after heads? You?
I'll tell you what, they look great. I did like the old slap heads. These new ones are even better, and the black ones, you know, we spoke fashion over function. I was talking about the Avid ones and the super bright colours, and I really love it, and I do like the Avid ones for $7.99 for a complete kit. You are not going to get a better a more functional set of bobbins for the price. You're just not going to get it. But these Nash ones, wow, it's just quality. And the black ones, they look sexy as hell. I've got to be honest, they look really slick. They're a damn sight more expensive than the Avid setup. I mean, the reason why I like that Avid setup so much was because of, you kind of got everything you needed in one pack. You know, there's a short chain, a long chain, two different body sizes, two different heads. You know, the downside being they came with weights, but you can never get them really heavy if, you know, how we discussed last week, fishing like 80 yards, 90 yards plus, and, you know, wanting a decent weight on it for the indication. The Avid ones probably aren't going to be quite heavy enough for me. But the Nash ones, you can get like the old swinger arms that Fox used to do. They do a swinger arm without a weight, a slightly longer swinger arm with a weight. They do the different chains. I like the fact that they have like a magnet clip, so you actually screw it into the screw and there's just a pull on and off magnet connection. There's everything you need with them, and my god, do they look good. Are they bright and fluorescent, like I said was a great idea from the Avid ones? No. Do they look really slick? Yes, they do. So I've not had a chance to use them yet, but I'm really impressed with the packaging, and I strongly advise you to check them out. So not quite a true review because I've not used them yet, but I'm really impressed with what's come in the package, and it looks like they're going to last forever.
Is this a new feature, the true preview?
True preview, yeah. Yeah, moving on. What's in Carp Talk this week? It comes out tomorrow, Tuesday. The digital version comes out on a Saturday. It's only £1.49, available from pocketmags.com. The digital being, it comes out a few days earlier than the normal one every week. And you can view it on your Apple device, iPhone, Android phone, PC, computer. Any way you want it, pocketmags.com is where you can get it from that. And obviously, it's a bit cheaper digitally as well. Or you can get it from your local news agent on a Tuesday. If they haven't got it, you can order it, or you can have a look on the Carp Talk website and see their stock is located, which will tell you where you can just go in and buy it. And what's in there this week, Mark?
Two UK 60s. Wow.
Yeah, the Parrot being one of them, I guess. No, I mean, what, has there been five different UK 60s this year?
It's four or five, yeah. I mean, obviously we've got, you know, the Parrot from Wazin that I think we mentioned last time round, and, you know, Lee Jackson fish from Strawberry Fields. I've not got a clue what that fish looks like, so, I will do, because I'll be giving this week's Carp Talk. But whatever has got my eye, Dave from Bluebell Swan has been out, along with, you know, four different UK 50s, including Dave. Obviously I was giving Dave a little bit of attention. Not too much, but the overall plan's changed. But what a fish.
If you want to check out all the stories of these monstrous fish, then this week's Carp Talk is where you need to be. They've also got news of a new exciting syndicate opening next month in Windsor Great Park, tickets which are now on sale. For more details, check out Carp Talk. And there's also a report from Carp Team England's success in the Six Nations tournament in France, where Rob Hughes will be coming on next week to tell you all about that. But again, check it out in this week's Carp Talk. There's the usual features as well. Adam Kluwer wrestles with the subject of when to bait and when not to bait in spring. Simon Bates puts Shimano's cheapest setup to the test on a local park lake. And Loz Smart reports on the Nash Lads Spring Social on the Cotswold Water Park. And there's a competition Mark's going to enter this week, isn't there, Mark?
Maybe, if I can remember. Two sets of Avid Carp traction rods to give away worth a cool £550.
Like we said, we want a carp cast listener to be winning that competition every week. You'd be surprised how few people actually bother to enter competitions, and the people that can be bothered win a lot. So get yourself a Carp Talk this week digitally or from pocketmags.com or from your local news agents or one of the stockies on the Carp Talk website, and get entering the Avid Carp Traction Rod giveaway. That's it. We hope you've enjoyed this week's show. We shall be back next weekend with Hughes's News and a new guest. If you want to support the show in any way, you can do that in lots of different ways. You can go to our website, www.thecarpcast.com, and there's loads of stuff you can get on there. You can subscribe to the Extra Podcast, which is a monthly extra, 2 to 3 hours long. There's half a dozen well-known anglers telling you stories of like their best captures, their scary situations on the bank, their funny situations, any spooky goings on. There's all sorts of stories on there, and you can subscribe yearly or you can buy individual episodes of that. You can also buy clothing, Carpcast hats, hoodies. There's t-shirts, The Carp Gods Giveth. Just loads of ways you can support us and help keep this weekly show free. And talking of competitions, Mark, we did a like and share competition a few weeks back. And have you picked a couple of winners?
I have. I've made notes of them on my iPad, which is at home. So as soon as I get home tomorrow, I will post them on our page. I will contact the contestants, the winners, to get their address and send their goodies out there.
Okay, well, we have picked two winners. They're going to receive a full set of Carpcast clothing, which is the hat, the hoodie, and the t-shirt. So, unfortunately, we can't tell you who the names are. Yeah. But Mark will post it up on our page within the next day or two.
I think one was a Richard, but no, I'm not going to commit, so I've got the actual names in front of me. So, my apologies for being disorganised and prioritising catching carp.
Okay, well, watch this space. We'll give the names out on next week's show, and we'll also post it over the next couple of days on our Facebook. Until next week, I hope you catch one, Mark, and we'll see you then.
I'm going to put the kettle on, smash some more Jaffa cakes and reel in some more carp. See you next week.
See you next week.
Check out the website at www.thecarpcast.com. There you'll find extra content, merchandise, and lots more to support the show, including our entire back catalogue of free offerings.